Blog Talk Radio.
Even in the ring.
Radio.
Go ahead, who's this?
Yo, David Chang.
Is it me, man, or is Marquez just a goddamn beast?
Every time Marquez moves up in weight, moves to a different division, he's fighting the toughest competition he can find there. You know, he's not just finding a name that's stylistically good for him. He's fighting the hardest fight he could fight, and then winning.
See, if anything's killing boxing, it's boxing. Not UFC.
You know, I won't bash MMA, and I won't say, you know, it's killing boxing or boxing is better. You know, everybody has their own opinion.
Leave it in the ring.
Radio.
Shane Mosley versus Margarito sold out the Staples Center, and that was the largest attendance for any event. Everything, every concert, anything. That was the most. And that was just recently. So that's really where boxing is headed, along with the Ricky Hatton, Manny Pacquiao. Selling out.
Leave it in the ring.
Radio.
Okay, but everybody right now, if you're calling in, I got a couple more calls calling in. I'm not going to pass you through at the moment, but there is a chat room. If you look on, there's a chat room. You can start chopping it up or ask your questions, and I will pass you in through as soon as we can.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Leave It in the Ring radio show. This is David Chen, and we have a packed show for you guys tonight. We have Mr. Kevin Rooney, once trainer for heavyweight champion of the world, Mike Tyson. We have a local Baltimore fighter, Henry Hurricane Mace, and his trainer and head coach from Baltimore Boxing, Mo Rice. We also have the one and only Israel Vasquez coming on eventually, and we have the lovely Miss Serafina. I believe my host, Chris from Sacramento, Blood from Florida, and Strikehearts from Pennsylvania are on the line. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good.
I'm good.
What's good?
Chris, what's going on, man? Our MMA expert, you know, let us know what's going on, man. You're the one that keeps up with everything. What's going on in the world of MMA, not just this weekend, but anything of note coming up?
Well, a couple just quick news items. I've been trying to run down Christian Cyborg for an interview. Me and Red been trying to work on that. Unfortunately, she pulled out of a bout she was going to have coming up next month, so I think that's probably why they're kind of being hard to get a hold of. And there's a event going down Saturday night, WEC interim title fight, Donald Cerrone against Ben Henderson on the Versus Network, so anyone that's got the Versus Network, free television, good fights. It's like the UFC's junior promotion. It's owned by the same company, but it's all lightweight fighters, 155 down to 135. It's kind of cool. I kind of like watching those fights because, you know, with the boxing, most of the smaller lightweights are fights are more fast-paced. And plus, you're seeing the surge of a lot more Hispanic, particularly Mexican fighters, moving to the MMA realm, you know, with these lower weight classes.
Now, can you tell us a little bit about these guys who are going to be in the main event, what kind of styles we can expect, things like that, what people can have looking forward to?
Yeah, no doubt, man. Ben Henderson, he only got a handful of fights so far. He's primarily a wrestler, but he knocked out his last guy. He's got some good hands. You know, he's a good athlete. And as for the other guy, Donald Cerrone, dude's a sick Muay Thai kickboxer, but he's got some awesome jiu-jitsu as well. I mean, I've seen him fight live. The guy, every time he fights, just he's like, I don't want to say he's like Arturo Gatti because I think he's got more skill, but every one of his fights is almost must-see. You're always going to get your money's worth, and since it's on Versus and it's free, I mean, you're definitely going to get your money's worth. So, you know, if you're a casual fan or a hardcore fan, I recommend checking out, or if you just want to watch a good night of fights for free, check it out Saturday night.
Now, you're stiffing the late Arturo Gatti a little bit there, man.
Oh, no, I'm not trying to diss him. I'm just saying, you know, I think that this guy's a little more higher level per fighter, but, you know, just because, you know, sometimes people put Arturo, because they hold such high regards for him as a fighter, they sometimes elevate his status more than it actually was in the boxing world. No disrespect, though.
I guess with Gatti, you always got to make the case that he's an entertaining fighter. It doesn't really mean he's always the best fighter. You know, we all know that. You know, we all watch Floyd Mayweather fight. But, Blood, what's going on, man? What's in boxing history, man, is there anything in terms of this week?
Nothing in terms of this week, but I did want to tell people that from now on, weekly, I'm going to talk a little bit about boxing history. So if you guys have any questions, hit me up. Hit up the radio show, email us, let us know. Give me some topics. But I will be talking a little bit about boxing history, just to school these young cats on, you know, with the game, man. Just let them know what's up, what's popping. So that's my thing. I'm a historian, so I want any questions. I want some tough questions, people. So hit me up with some tough questions. All right.
Now, if you're a YouTube fan and you watch any of our videos, you probably saw Strikeheart's video this week where he's the working man, secret agent man, Man in Black, right?
Strikeheart,
is that piece real?
It's real. There's no special effects. That's me.
I mean, I'm saying, like, do you need a gun to do retail, man? Isn't that what you do?
You always got to be prepared. That's all I got to say about a gun.
Okay, I guess Pennsylvania is kind of a rough place.
No. The world's a rough place, though. It's as rough as everywhere else is. And there's a lot of crazy people out there. I will say I keep it legal, but there's a lot of people out there who don't. And you got to be ready for anything. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, we all like that bit with the cat in the end, man. I think that's like a pretty cool thing.
You can't act like a gangster without petting a cat. That's all I got to say.
Everybody on the Living in the Ring with us, we got many guests coming up, Mr. Cameron Rooney, Serafina, Israel Vasquez, and some local fighters out of Baltimore. Now, guys, they just made a fight that I'm kind of interested in. Apparently, Joshua Clady will be fighting Carlos Quintana on December 5th, most likely as a co-main event to Kelly Pavlik and Paul Williams. What do you guys think of that fight? We'll start with Chris.
I think it's a pretty good fight. The one thing I'm kind of curious about, though, is I had read online somewhere that Clady was offered a fight against Sergio Martinez and declined it, which I don't know if it's just because he didn't want to move up to junior welterweight, but I don't understand why you wouldn't take that opportunity, which is for a title, and take Carlos Quintana. The fight itself, I think, is a good fight. You know, both guys, definitely different styles, guys that have trouble getting, well, I wouldn't say they have trouble getting big fights, but they're more so the B side of, like, marquee fights, but I think it'll make for a good fight. I'm just kind of curious why Clady would take that fight over a Martinez fight.
You know, it could be because he thinks Martinez would be troublesome, where Quintana would be an easier fight. You know, maybe he also cares more about welterweight division than he does the junior middleweight division. Strikeheart, what do you think?
Definitely your second statement there makes sense. I think that he does care more about making his statement at welterweight. It's an interesting matchup only because they're both more technical guys. They both had a couple of hard losses. It's definitely an interesting matchup, but like Chris said, they're kind of both B fighters at this point. Neither one of them has made it super big. So in that regard, I think maybe even though Sergio Martinez certainly isn't a huge name, that probably would have made for a more exciting matchup. Not that this is bad. So I haven't really broke it down in my head, but as far as who would win, I think most likely, I mean, I'd really like to hear somebody make a case for Quintana. I think Clady wins just because of his size more than anything else at this point without thinking it over.
Blood, what do you think about Carlos Quintana as a fighter, man? Are you familiar with him? You know, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm very familiar with him. I think he's a B-class fighter, but I would have to disagree with the part with Clady. I think Clady's an A-class fighter, man. He just had a couple of bad breaks. I think Clady will win the fight. I know a lot of people have been writing me up. They've been hitting me about the catch weight. I don't know. Can anybody give me some information on that? Because I heard that this fight is going to be fought at a catch weight.
You know, I think they want to fight at 149.5 pounds, something like that. I read that somewhere, and I'm not really sure why that would be. Both of them are welterweights. You know, maybe both of them have a hard time coming down in weight, and since it's not a championship fight, they figure let's take it easy. I mean, I'm really not quite sure. But we got our last host, 97 Rough, on the line, I believe. Dave, you there, brother?
How you doing, man?
All right. What do you think about Carlos Quintana signing up to fight Joshua Clady?
Well, you know what? We're trying to get Carlos Quintana right now for next week. Maybe talk about that little fight a little bit. To me, it's a good fight for him. I mean, honestly, a lot of people underrate him about his skills. It's a great fight. But we got a lot of news to cover up and all that. We got Luis Collazo's manager wants to call in. So we got to keep an eye out for that because he wants to talk about something exclusive with only with Leave It in the Ring.
Right on.
So we got to make sure. There's another announcement, too. You know, we just signed a major deal with Havoc Apparel, who's going to be representing us and stuff of Leave It in the Ring. It's a great promotional deal with us. So, you know, Leave It in the Ring's making some great deals. We're going to do the thing. Everybody in Leave It in the Ring is going to be wearing Havoc Apparel just to move it up along and stuff like that so we can do the There Will Be Blood Apparel ourselves and stuff and keep moving along. Another great thing is that on the grind, I stepped up to the plate. They won't fight 97 Ross. They've denied me. They said they won't do it. Whatever the reason is, okay. They feel that blood will be a much safer fight, which is cool. I understand. And stuff, I don't get it. But blood is a much bigger man than me. But they feel that that'll be a much safer fight. I'm waiting for On the Grind and Make a Call. Make a call to 97 Rough, and then we can negotiate where this is going to go to next. You know what I mean? Meaning that they're talking about pay-per-view buys, which I don't understand because nobody knows On the Grind except for
nobody
David
knows
Marie.
Who they are. Don't nobody
yeah.
know who they are.
Nobody knows who they are. But, you know, Glenn has already said, I'm going to do it.
Hell yeah.
Blood has already stated to me, it has nothing to do with money, has nothing to do with proceeds. Let's just make the fight happen. Blood does not give a shit about, yeah, exactly. He does not care about publicity. It's not about publicity. It's about shutting a few punks. Let me rephrase that. A few punks that got big mouths that want to talk hard and then want to negotiate. So, Blood has agreed, I'm going to do this. And really, if there's money that's going to go anywhere, it's going to go to children, of course, that are more unprivileged than in the world, because that's the kind of man Blood is. Blood is a very generous person. You know, a lot of people think that Blood's a gangster. He's not a gangster. This is a very educated man. He's coming from Florida. He went to UC up in Florida. This is a man that has more compassion than what a lot of people think. A lot of people have came at him like, oh, he's a racist person. He's this. You're far from it. Far from it.
Yeah, but I know one thing. I'm going to beat that little boy butt, though. I'm going to whip his butt. Sign the contract, homeboy.
You know, the fact of the matter is this. You know what? His Blood is a great guy. He's one of my best friends. One of my partners. Is my partner in crime when it comes radio, my partner in crime, it comes to therewillbebloodfightshow.com. He's one of the men that has built this company into what it is. Havoc would not be interested in us if it wasn't for Blood, Strikeheart, David Chan, or 916 Chris, or all from standandfight.com. Blood is a great guy. And really, Blood has even said himself, you know what, man? This is dumb. This is foolish. But if this is what we want, we're going to do it. So be it, so whatever we're going to have. Today we're going to have Kevin Rooney, who's brought by David Chan. After this, we're going to have Isaiah Vasquez, who's got a fight coming up this weekend. Great fight. And we got Jesse Rieke that's going to do some translations for us and stuff. Next week, we got Mia St. John. She's been on Playboy. Beautiful woman, first off. If you never see her in person, my God. I'm telling you right now, she's going to steal your heart. Beautiful woman. Other than that, we're going to have a lot of other people coming up on the show and stuff. But like I said right now, Havoc Apparel has gave us the yes to promote. They're going to promote us. What more do we need? How do we prove that we're doing what we got to do? We never said we're number one, and we'll never claim that. Because you know what? There's a lot of great boxing shows out there. Man, there's a lot. I listen to the Boxing Truth. Great. John Chavez and those great guys, man. Those guys, they can bring it. Bring it. And then we got Carlitos and Ashley Knuckles and Joe Habib. These guys are fantastic as well. Great knowledge. They're going to bring it also. But the one people that I'm going to put my stamp on that I believe that are going to bring it all the way, Guardia Grill. My boy from Guardia Grill.
Yes, sir.
These dudes are going to bring it. You know why they're going to bring it? Not only do they got personality, they got the knowledge to bring it. They got the hip-hop that won't even want to stop. Boys are like Biggie and Tupac all combined in one another. But leave it in the ring. You want it? We're going to bring it. You know, we're always the first that bring the first. We're always the ones that bring the news. Strike Hard, I got to give it a Strike Hard because, my man, I thought I was watching a Quentin Tarantino movie and stuff when I watched his last video. Fantastic. It was great. Strike Hard, you on the line?
Yeah, I'm here.
You know what? Strike Hard's got to get a fucking major deal first off when it comes to filmmaking because the dude is phenomenal. I was rolling. I was laughing. And the last song that he had going, don't change that channel. Bro, I did not change that channel for a bit. And the way your film angles was great. I mean, what's up with that? A guy that comes out of the woodworks, and first off, the guy that comes out of the woodworks, when you talk about Marvelous Margaret Hagler, which is, first off, one of my favorite fighters, and Strike Hard. Me and him, Strike Hard, we and Strike Hard are going to talk about this, okay? Strike Hard, I'm going to send you the video and stuff, but we talk about blue collar fight workmanship. You brought it. You blew everybody out. Nobody in the ring has done this. You blew everybody out of the water. I was a little bit jealous because your photo angles wouldn't fit. What happened?
Thank you.
I mean, I automatically emailed, I didn't even sit on your profile. I said, a star is born. What did you do? I mean, what made you want to do this?
Well, first of all, part of the reason why I did it that way, I didn't really come at Rob Riddler hard, just because we all respect Rob so much. But I couldn't let him say something about Nate Campbell without redirecting people to another point of view. So that's where the thought process began. So I just decided to have a little bit more fun than anything else. And that's what came out.
You know what I like the most about you? Hold this. You know what I like the most? I'm going to tell you right now. Because I just dropped $100 bills in down the $20
bill.
$20 bill. You know what I liked the most, man, was that the kitty cat. Because, you know,
we always talk
about biting some pussy, and you obviously took the bite.
Yeah. Oh, that was just something I did ad lib. I just decided to bite the cat.
You decided to bite the pussy.
As far as that end song goes, there's actually a story behind that. So maybe I'll talk about that for a minute now. The artist that I played at the end, he's kind of a local artist from the 70s, a funk artist named Captain Sky. And a long time ago, I don't even know how to put a number on it, but it was towards when I had first moved to Pennsylvania. One of my first friends I made here, Dominic, we went and bought an old Chevy Malibu, and it came with an 8-track, and we found a box of old 8-tracks in the trunk of the car, and one of them was this awesome funk 8-track, Captain Sky, Pop Goes the Captain, and after hearing that, he's from Philly, I really fell in love with that guy. So that's who that was. It was a Philadelphia funk
really
artist from the 70s.
You know what, Striker? I really enjoyed that track, and really honestly, I wish that – let's put it on Leave It in the Ring, because that track really deserves some exposure. It was that fun of a track.
This guy, I don't know how big he was in the 70s in Philadelphia, but he deserved to be damn big. I never heard of him until I moved here, and I just happened to – go with a friend to buy a used car. That's how I found out about Captain Sky.
And it's one of those type of tracks, right, Blood, where you got to sit back and you go, that nigga's just the shit. I was bobbing my head, and I was like, this motherfucker got something going on good. I enjoyed it so much. I played that goddamn video just for that one track three times. You know? it was that good. So we got to have it on Leave It in the Ring. That's something else that is just, you know, it's innovating. Not only is it innovating, it just shows the creativity that the guys in the panel have brought. You know, David Chen just did an interview with Luis Collazo. My computer's down off, first off, guys, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, David Chen, he's always up to par. He's always doing his work and stuff, just like Chris 916. Chris 916 always doing his thing. You know, my computer. So anytime, really honestly, something will come up right away. I did an interview with Paul Williams, which was fantastic. Mr. Paul Williams announced that the contract's not even signed yet with Pavlik. So December 5th or whatever the day was set for may not even happen, but it may happen with another opponent because he needs to fight. He doesn't want to get rusty. But, like, I'm going back to what I'm talking about with David Chen and 916 is that they always bring up to par. Leave It in the Ring, always bring it up to par. You know, 97 Rough sometimes does not catch up. We need to correct this, fix this. You know what I'm saying? And it's not up to Desi Rican. It's not up to Machine Gun Red. It's up to 97 Rough, Dave Duenas. You know, Strikeheart has brought it. Now, can we keep it up? I don't know. And we better, though, because we got Havoc, like I said, Havoc Apparel that's bringing it to us and stuff is going to bring out some apparel to us to wear, and they're going to start sponsoring the Will Be Blood and Leave It in the Ring apparel. So that's a big deal. Blood, any input, brother, what you want to say about all this stuff that's happening next?
What's that? Hey, man, I'm excited, bro. I'm excited about everything, man. You know, there's a great panel up here. You know, I love working with y'all, man, and this is going to be a life thing for me, bro. You know, y'all are more than just guys I work with, y'all fam. So, hey, man, let's bring it, bro. Leave it at that.
I'm going to pass it over to David Chen. David Chen, take it real quick for me, brother. I got to take care of some business real quick, but take the panel for me. Tell me some boxing news or 9166. I mean, 916. Chris, what you got? We got any MMA news, brother?
Actually, I already broke that down, but real quick on the boxing tip. I see Juan Manuel Lopez is fighting this weekend. And Gamboa, is that still going down? Does anyone know about that? David Chen, Strikeheart?
Well, I know that.
Yeah, go ahead, Dave.
No, go ahead.
I mean, I know that they're talking about it. I don't know if it's. I know that Top Rank is trying to build that up. I don't know for sure if that's going to happen. You know, there's a lot of other fights between those guys that they got to get through in order to make this a super fight. Because in reality, this is not a super fight among a media. You know what I mean? Among casual fans. This is a super fight among hardcore fans. You know what I'm saying? So whether or not it's going to be a big fight, I don't know. I mean, we're talking about Gamboa versus Lopez, right?
Yeah, no, actually, they're both fighting on the same pay-per-view card this weekend. You know, they're building towards the fight.
Right. That's what I'm saying. I mean, whether or not, I mean, you know what? One fight card is not going to be enough. I don't think so. Strikeheart?
I agree, and I don't think it would be very wise for Gamboa to get in there with Juan Manuel Lopez at this point. He still shows that he needs to grow a lot before he gets to a place where he can do something like that. That would be a very bad move. So I hope that fight doesn't happen just because I don't think Gamboa is near ready for that. He's got talent, but he's not a seasoned pro yet at all. So I would hope that fight doesn't happen for a while.
Let's open this up to some of the callers on the air with us right now because we have a few people on with us. We have a caller from the area code 339. Caller from 339, do you have any opinion on Juan Manuel Lopez or anything else? Caller from area code 339, are you on the air? Yes, sir. Who's this?
Go ahead, man. Speak on it, brother.
All right, well, we got Chris Collinson, a.k.a. Carlito, on the line. Maybe he got something to say about all this.
Yeah, actually, I got something to say. It should be somewhat of an interesting fight, and I hear that they are building for. I heard that they're building two fights, though. I heard that between the Gamboa and Lopez. But just a little breaking news. I heard Monty Barrett is going to be for Solis, the heavyweight fight. It started out Johnson, then it was somebody else. Now I've heard that Monty Barrett is going to be the third fight on that top-ranked card. But yeah, I heard that there's going to be a doubleheader, possibly Lopez and Caballero, and then Gamboa and somebody, whether it be, who knows, Santiago or Luevano or somebody top level, top 10 for Gamboa. And then in June, then set up for the big fight. But it's just speculation now, but I know that there's a date on HBO set for Lopez, and they're trying to get Lopez and Gamboa in another doubleheader. But, yeah, I wish Johnson was fighting in that card, though, you know. That would have been kind of a cool fight, but for him and Solis, for the heavyweight fight, that's a pretty decent fight. But, yeah, I mean.
Absolutely. You know what? That's what they need to do. They need to build that fight up a little more. Johnson, you're absolutely right about Johnson. Get him on the card. Give him some more exposure because, really, honestly, even with Chris Lamama Oriella, he was not a very much an American exposed heavyweight. Not a lot of people knew about the guy. He lost. It honestly, to me, Chris Lamama Oriella did not lose a lot of fans because of the fact that he was not that exposed. You know, I'm going to have dinner with Henry and Chris next week with Fernando Vargas. And really, I felt that, Chris, you know what, this didn't damage you as much as what you thought it did. Maybe it did mentally, it damaged him and stuff, but I really think that it was not a major, major damage where it was going to destroy him when it comes to comparing fans and stuff because of the fact that this was not a very exposed heavyweight. Not a lot of people believe in him. A lot of people criticize because of his weight. A lot of people will say, like, oh, this is a fat guy. Oh, he doesn't respect the sport because he's a fucking chubster. Right?
Yeah, you're right. And it got a really good rating, too, and he put up a fight. A lot of people thought he'd get blown out the frame in three rounds. So, yeah, you're right. I think it just helped him in the long run.
Exactly. It helped him a long run because a lot of people were counting him out. They were saying 3, 4, 5. I said 9 rounds. I was 1 round off. Okay. I walked up. I seen Steve Kim at the fighting event, along with Victor Ortiz, and I saw Garage Boxing. They came up to me. Great guys, two set of guys, got a YouTube channel. Great set of guys, you know what I'm saying? Same thing like Carlitos. Carlitos, I enjoy Carlitos. You know what's funny is that Carlitos does undercards that really nobody wants to do. He'll break down fights and give you coverage of the fights that nobody talks about. I don't have time to do it. So when I want to find out if somebody's I go to Carlito's page. Phenomenal. Go ahead, David.
You
got to
get in where you fit in, you know? You got to try to find your little niche. And I kind of like covering those things just to give, you know, because everybody's going to do, including me, the big fights. But, yeah, definitely, you know, that's where boxing needs to go anyway to actually get some undercard fights or mid-level fights, you know what I mean?
So don't get too confident on Carlitos. I'm going to take that shit away from you in a minute.
Speaking of that, did anybody...
I will take that away from you in a minute, man. No, no, brother, I enjoy it. That's why I'm giving you props. I completely enjoy it. I wish I had the time to do it. I mean, we do cover it on a website, but when it comes to verbal, hey, Carlitos does a great, fantastic job. Leave it in the ring. Always gives props to where it's due. On your grind, you suck. You know you do. Oh, well.
Speaking of the smaller fights, did anybody beside myself catch the Showbox from this past weekend?
Middle fight was interesting.
I didn't catch.
I know Carlitos did. Go Carlitos, what you got on that on the card fight?
Yeah, that middle fight where a lot of people, it's Crawford, and I'm forgetting the dang name of the guy who won.
Smith.
Crawford came out just kind of, you know, tagging him, showing his speed, thinking, here we go, you know. But then Smith slowly started working the body, kept hunting him down. And it was just a crazy all-around fight because Crawford actually, it looked like he may have been hurt, but you couldn't tell because he was kind of doing the Sugar Ray Leonard, like shaking it off, and all of a sudden are walking it out at the same time. And all of a sudden, he got caught with
Wait. So when you talk about the Sugar Ray Leonard, come on, because we gotta, this is radio, so you got a little bit more of a description, because you got some listeners right now thinking about, okay, I'm not really too familiar with Sugar Ray Leonard. What are we talking about?
All right, well, this is where you kind of step back, and you kind of, if someone tags you with a good punch, you kind of wiggle it off a little bit, kind of like Calzaghe and Roy Jones fight, how he kind of wiggled it off a bunch of times in that fight. He was kind of showboating with him a little bit, like, yeah, you got me, but that really didn't hurt. And he was kind of messing with him and looking like he's wobbly, kind of looking like he was kind of wobbled, drunk, or hurt. And all of a sudden, he did get hit with a clean shot because Crawford was off balance, and Smith put him down. And really, he looked really bad, man. He had it to the point where he had him on the rope. His mouth guard was – he spit his mouth guard out. He was just kind of walking around like a zombie in that, right. I believe, sixth round. And all of a sudden, like Crawford, you know, his corner's like, are you okay, you okay? And it could have been stopped. It really could have been stopped in the sixth. But then all of a sudden, Crawford slowly, I'll admit, but slowly but surely kind of got back into the fight, and then boom, Smith knocked him out with a great punch that he actually tripped a little bit and then landed, a clean right hand and put him out. It was
okay,
a great, random fight, man.
Fellas, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I believe we got our special guest, Mr. Kevin Rooney, on the line. Mr. Rooney, are you there?
I am. Do you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yep, I'm here.
Kevin,
Dave, go ahead, I'm doing good. What's up?
You know, first off, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us here and leaving the thing. Really appreciate it, because I know you're a businessman, very busy person and stuff. You know what, Kevin, me and the guys have been arguing a little bit about the fact, did you... Because, you know, I don't know if we had any time to check it out real quick, but I'm pretty sure you trained the Duke for a minute, right?
I trained who for a minute?
The Duke.
I don't know. Who's Duke? I don't know who Duke is. You there?
You know, hello? Tommy Morrison.
Oh, yeah, Tommy Morrison, yeah, I trained him for a couple of weeks.
And let me ask you this, how did that go with, training Tommy Morrison? And what happened? I mean, why did you stop after a few weeks?
Well, you know, I went down to Kansas, Missouri, wherever it was, and I worked his corner for a fight, and then... his manager, his co-manager, Bill Caton, had bought into the contract, and he recommended me to train Tommy. And then Joe Brown, the other manager, he didn't, for some reason, he didn't like me. And so then they just, you know, that was that. And, you know, that's how the boxing game is. It's crazy like that.
Now, when you were training Tommy the Duke Morrison, okay, like you said right now, you just trained him for that one fight, they didn't like you and all that. See any real potential? Were you seeing a world champion, or were you, like, taking it for the money?
Well, I wasn't taking it for the money, and I wouldn't say that, I thought he needed work, you know, and he never became a world champion. I know he fought for the title, and then he got starts. Is how I remember it. I could be wrong.
So what fight were you training him for, though, when that happened?
I don't remember, to tell you the truth. It was just a local fight. He had a local fight, and then I was training, you know, then there was, what's his name, Brown. He said to, he told Bill or something. He said he put in a bad word, and I just walked away.
Okay, so, you know, obviously a lot of fight fans are going to know you from Mike Tyson. But before we get into Mike Tyson, the whole bit and stuff like that, Let's talk about some other stuff, man. I mean, let's talk about other fighters that you feel, you know what, these guys are worth talking about. You know, for instance, right now, you're training some fighters. Let's talk about some of the fighters that you're working with at this moment.
Well, I got Jay Krupp. He's out of New Orleans. His record is 13-3. I'm down here in Maryland. I work with Jake the Snake Smith. You know, we hooked up in 1996 down in Florida, and there's a Hell and Back is Friday, October 16th. They're having a big card on Drew Burns Arena, featuring this guy that I'm working with, Mike Dietrich. They got the American Dream. He's 10-1. I'm working with a kid, Steven Wheeler. He's 3-0 with 3 knockouts. And I'm working with another guy. His name is Joe Diesel DeLoader. He's making his pro debut. But I just come down here to help, Jake, you know, help him with trying to train his fighters. I'm really looking, you know, Kevin is looking for a heavyweight because Kevin's not happy that all the titles are over in Europe. They're in Russia. There's one in Germany. There's really no outstanding prospects that I'm looking at. I don't see anybody, you know. A lot of crap happened along the way, you know. We don't have free TV. You don't see any boxing shows on NBC or ABC on the weekend anymore. That hurts. That hurts the game. And the money's so much bigger for big guys playing football, basketball, even baseball. And you know, a lot of guys don't want to deal with the fear of getting in the ring and fighting another guy the same size. But I'm always on the look, and I just keep hoping that that a heavyweight stumbles my way, or any fight. I mean, sure, I trained Tyson and all that, and then my next fighter that I helped the most was Vinny Pazienza, and he appreciated it. And Vinny, here's Vinny's the only athlete to ever break his neck and come back from that, and his managers or promotion company, they screwed him. They told him to give up the title, and instead of they had Holyfield the main events, and they told Vinny to give the title up, and Vinny wanted to fight the number one contender, and so that's the inner workings of boxing. Boxing, the sport. It's a love sport because it's one on one. It's me against you, and there's no excuses. I can't blame the pitcher for throwing the wrong thing. I can't blame the lineman for not making the block. I can't blame the basketball player for not passing me the ball when I had an easy layup. Boxing, it's just you and the other guy. It's one on one. It goes all the way back to the Roman days, and that's what I like about it. And Don King is old, and hopefully he's going to be retired pretty soon. He wrecked boxing. He wrecked it. I mean, he's the reason the networks didn't want to deal with boxing anymore, because they didn't want to deal with him.
Let me ask you this, because right now you said, Don King, hopefully he retires. Do you see right now anybody replacing Don King? I mean, because there's a lot of people saying Golden Boy are taking that same strive. They're taking that same swagger. They're screwing over fighters, or they're making fighters do obstacles that are nearly impossible. Right now you're talking about certain things that are just nearly unreasonable, where fight fans really are walking away and saying, this is bullshit.
That's true, but you got to look at boxing, how boxing's always been, and it goes back way back to the beginning of the century, 1900s, when Jack Johnson was the first black heavyweight, and after he got beat, the black fighters, great fighters, all out there that we never saw or even knew about. Because of the racial situation, ignorant people were and are that back then and about, oh, well, we can't have a black heavyweight. Who's ever the best fighter? He's won. And then Joe Louis got the shot, and he held the title, I don't think it was for 12 years before he lost again. And then, of course, you had Rocky Marciano, the undefeated heavyweight champion. No one ever beat him, 49-0. And then you had Floyd Patterson. Now, and that whole time right there, there was a lot of, under silent partners were lying all over the place. And then,
Kevin, you talk about Jack Johnson and you talk about Joe Louis, there was a price to pay. Jack Johnson literally had to suffer a charge for it. Wanting to date a white woman. He had to go run away to Mexico, extradite to that part. And then Joe Louis had to sign a contract with James Broderick in order to bring out that. Is boxing in the same stature or in fact in the same, I would have to say, stigma of where you have to literally sell your soul to become a world champion? Do you believe it's in that same breath?
No, things changed after Cuss had Floyd Patterson take over the heavyweight title as the youngest heavyweight at that point. And Cuss showed the public how you can take a fighter and become world champion. And that's what Cuss, when you have the heavyweight champion of the world in boxing, you control boxing whether you know it or not. But you control boxing. And what had happened is Don King jumped in out of prison and Muhammad Ali was helping him, never knowing that King turned out to be, probably the biggest, crook against the fighters ever, and that's just, but that's the way the game's always been that way. Life is like that. You got to take life on life's terms, and I'm not here to bash anybody, but boxing is boxing, and all I'm saying is, we need to get a heavyweight who can go over to Europe and beat up and take these titles away from the Klitschko brothers and the other guy, the German guy, whoever that is.
Okay, so Kevin, knowing Mike Tyson, was Mike Tyson crazy or was this guy a genius in marketing himself in such a way nobody's ever done in history? Muhammad Ali had a way of bringing himself out to being the greatest champion of all time. Iron Mike, who I admit, Iron Mike is a very docile, quiet person. Is Iron Mike just a genius in bringing the best out of what needs to be marketable to make him a rich man?
What are you talking about? What Tyson did?
Yeah, what Mike did. Exactly. What Mike did.
Cuss died, Mike was 11-0, and Cuss left Mike with Jimmy Jakes, Bill Cate, and Kevin Rooney, me being the trainer, them, Jimmy and Bill being the managers, and Tyson was on his road to becoming the greatest heavyweight ever, in my opinion. And we wanted to break Rocky Marciano's 49-0, and we would have, but Mike married Robin Givens, and Robin Givens, did whatever that she did, stealing all the money from him. And when that happened, Jimmy died. So now Tyson was suffering from Cuss's loss like a year earlier, and then Jimmy died when we were in Japan for the Tubbs fight. And when we came back, Bill was able to keep the whole thing together, and we had the Sphinx fight. And then Mike and Robin started fighting that summer about nothing, and then Don King got Mike to leave Bill Caton, and then he got Mike to fire me in the newspaper, and I called every phone number I had, and it was disconnected. So who caused the problem? Mike Tyson. Who's at fault? Mike Tyson. But he was taking advantage of, because he was a little bit, he didn't have enough time with Cuss D'Amato. If Cuss had a couple more years, I believe that never would have happened. But no one ever talks about that. Now you talk about Mike like he's a bum, looking on this, that, and the other thing. Well, that comes with, when they throw mud at you. It happens all the time. Like I say, that's life. You got to learn to deal with stuff like that, especially in the boxing game. But the hope is always there that we can find an outstanding fight. I was talking to some kid in the gym today, and I was surprised that he said, what do I got to do to become a real champ? And then I talked to him for about 5-10 minutes, and it was a pleasure, to tell you the truth. I mean, the kid, I don't know what's going to happen to him, because I only come down here when Jake asked me to come down and help him, with putting on his show, and he's got a heavyweight, Mike Dietrich, he's 10-1. He has a kid, Eliza Bolo Basis, he's a undefeated in 7 pro fights. This is the card that's coming up on October 16th. And you got the co-main event is Andy Duman Farmer from Fort Royal, Virginia. He's fighting Rockin' Ryan Bellicose, Newcastle, Delaware. That's the co-main event. The main event is James Keep 'em Sleeping Stevenson. He's 11-0 with 10 knockouts. And all these guys are fighting on the card. And it should be... it's almost sold out already, and then there's also, we may be getting the number one contender of the WBA, the Russian fighter out of Russia, who's got a record of 17-0, and they're trying to get him to come, because there's a big Russian community here in Maryland, and that could excite them up, and they can come and sell the place out. But everything is looking good. When you got shows like this, like Jake's been putting on, this is what boxing needs. And what we also need is, let's see some shows on the weekends again, on Saturday afternoon. Do you remember them when they used to show the
I remember them. I remember them very clear and everything. And you really, honestly, that's why we got shows like Leaving the Ring, so that we can really be refreshed about how it was, how it used to be to build champs up.
Well, like you said, you mentioned the Golden Boys, and their mistake, as far as I can see right now, is they were dependent on themselves. Whitaker, Hopkins, De La Hoya, and then once all those guys got beat or retired, they had nothing to back them up. They have guys under contract, but none of them are ready to step up and fight for a championship. But with that said, Golden Boys, as far as I'm concerned, it's a pleasure to see a different promoter in, as long as they don't try to use the same tactics, legally tactics, that Don King and Bob Arum and other promoters, they sign you up as a fighter. Okay, I'm helping you now. Now you got to sign this contract. Some guys were honest about it. Some guys weren't.
Well, yeah, Kevin. I mean, Golden Boy, in all honesty, do you feel that it's a way that these old fighters don't want to let go of the past, and it's just a vehicle to keep their careers going by having new fighters come in and filter it in?
Well, I don't think that they think like that. I think that, they would like to – everyone wants to see a new rising star. Everybody wants to see that. And
you got fighters like Bernard Hopkins scoring out – Roy Jones Jr., they're going to make it happen. I mean, why do these so-called fighters that are trying to become promoters keep fighting? I mean,
Oh, the money. They went for the money. Okay, I can answer that question for you. It's the money. They're getting paid $5 million to defend the title or $5 million to fight for the title, and the other guy's getting $5 million. And then when the fight is over and the pay-per-view numbers come in, and if they did over a million homes, they're putting the promoters' money in their pocket also. So they're eating a sandwich from one side to the other side, which it's okay, it's not illegal. But what I said earlier, but once them guys are out of the picture, if they don't come up with anybody else, well then. The door's always open there. I mean, if anybody's out there who wants to, invest $10 million, come to me, and I'll make sure that you get your $10 million back and more. Because that's really what it comes down to. You got to know what you're doing. You got to sign up fighters, and you got to treat the fighter like the god he really is. And that's, promoters, they like to walk over the fighter like he's nothing. And that's what always pissed me off from day one. And, it's the fighter who's getting in there putting his life on the line, not the promoter who's just sitting there, smoking a cigar, whatever he's been doing. And, but that's, But again, that's life. Now, hopefully, if you got the right person in the right position, maybe it would happen, and it should happen. I'm always looking to help young kids, I'm getting older too, so it's like, okay, well, maybe I can find someone a little quicker, but it don't work that way. The best way is to get a young kid anywhere from the age of 5 to 10 years old and get that kid as many fights and as many sparring matches as you can, and then he's going to develop into a great fighter. And it will happen. It will happen. I wish I could tell you this guy, that guy, but the fighters on this card, they all have potential. Now, whether or not they got the discipline to stick with it, that's a whole other story, and only time will tell. Only time will tell. But Jake always puts on great cards, competitive cards. People always go away. I know, I'm promoting this fight because I'm here. So I hope you don't mind.
No. I don't mind that. We're gonna right now. We'll give you a plug with Jake's card and all that. But let me ask you this real quick before you do that, and go ahead and give his plug and all that. But there's so many rumors and so many remedies of when a fighter or a kid, when he steps in the ring, when does he get into a sparring match? What is the time frame? Because you get a lot of kids. I get a lot of kids that come into the gym and they say, "Hey, listen, when should I get in the ring?" And then you get the old-timers that say, 2 years. When is the proper time when a kid should really, honestly, now with no experience whatsoever, he's got no footwork, he's got no punches, when does he step in the ring to learn, really, this is something that you may want to think about of making a career?
I got the answer for you, the Kevin Rooney answer anyway. Well, you're just saying, a new kid comes in, a young kid, he comes into my gym, I'm going to let him work on the floor for 1, 2, 3, 4 weeks. And if he's showing that he's learning, then this is what Kevin does. I'll let, when do you want to spar? Do you want to spar? And I've done this with some guys, and some of them just like look the other way, so that means they're not ready. He's still nervous because he's got that fear. But this happened to me. This is a funny story because some kid walked in and said, "When do you want to spar?" He said, "I want to spar tomorrow." I said, "Thank you. You be here tomorrow, and you're gonna spar. Go get a mouthpiece, and you're gonna spar." The next day he didn't show up. But now I have other kids to answer your question. So now let's say I got the kid. He's 10 years old. He's been in the gym doing ordinary training, hitting the bag, jumping rope, exercises. I'm showing him how to move his head to get away from punches. Now I say, when do you want to spar? And then I hope the kid says, "I want to spar right now." And then if he says that, now we're talking about a kid that's been in the gym for say 3 or 4 weeks, 1 month, and he says, "I want to spar now." Then I put him in the ring, and then he learns from there, because he's only going to learn by getting in the ring and boxing. He's not going to learn learn anything major by hitting a bag and jumping a rope. The only way any fighter will progress and become a great fighter, a good fighter, a decent fighter, a fighter with heart, is by getting in the ring. If you ain't doing that, you're missing the boat.
Absolutely, man. Kevin Rooney, we got Kevin Rooney on Leaving the Ring right now. Hall of Famer, renowned trainer. If you haven't heard of him, I mean, regardless if you've heard of Mike Tyson, the name Kevin Rooney has been there. We got him on the line, so if you guys want to make a phone call right now, go ahead and do it. Havoc Apparel is one of our sponsors. Kevin, let me ask you this, okay? And really, honestly, getting the chance to see Iron Mike right then and fresh, okay, was this a kid that automatically you looked at and you go, "Holy shit, this kid's got the goods"?
Well, you know what? When he first came around, I was like 7-0 as a pro fighter. So I was like, okay, I'm going to check him out. And Cuts had him come to the gym. And The first time he just hit the bag. Then the next week, and that's when I went there, he was going to spar with Bobby Stewart. I had spar with Bobby Stewart myself when he was a light heavyweight, and he could punch pretty good, and we had conversations after, you know, over the years, after everything had happened and how it happened. But this is a fact. This is what happened. So Mike and Bobby Stewart, and Bobby told me afterwards that he had to get in shape to keep Tyson off him because he didn't want Tyson to whoop his ass in front of everybody else because he was working in a juvenile detention center for these kids. And so and he laughed when he said it. So, and he did get in good shape. So this day, they spar, the second round's over with, and Bobby was, you know, keeping Tyson was giving him a bit of a beat, let's put it that way. So after two rounds, Cus said, I seen enough, that's good. And Tyson says, no, we always go three rounds. So they do the third round. Mike jumps out of the ring and starts walking down towards where the bag is. And Cus was sitting at ringside on the floor right next to the right outside of the ring. He gets up, Cus DeMille gets up, and the kid is 13 years old and points at him and says, there's the next heavyweight champion of the world. He didn't say what year. He just said, there's the next heavyweight champion of the world. And that's a fact. That's a fact. And I was working in a juvenile lockup. Tyson was in a farm. I was in a lockup where back in the 70s, they changed the law where a juvenile, if he committed an adult crime like murder or this or that, he would get sentenced to a juvenile detention center. And then when he became 18, he would go on to state prisons. Let's just say a guy got 25 years to life for killing somebody, which there was a guy in the place where I was, and he was 17 years old. So as soon as I seen Tyson, and I said, this kid cannot be 13 years old. He looked like a man. He was well-built, quick as hell. And so the one thing I said to Cus afterwards, I said, Cus, you know what, you better check this guy's age. He may be lying about it because he don't want to go into prison. And then everything turned out, you know, because he was on probation and, you know, the ladies, you know, everything. He was 13 years old. He was a 13-year-old man, a man who looked, he was 13 years old, who looked like he was 25 years old, well-built. Mike was, you know, was very smart, a lot smarter than people ever give him credit for, especially now that, you know, it's like, oh, you know, you were real dumb and you did this, you did that. He had circumstances. Again, I say it now, and I say it many times. If Cus had just stayed alive for a couple more years, if that was King getting in there, it wouldn't have happened. And if Jimmy Jacobs hadn't died, it wouldn't have happened. But when the opening was there, King jumped right in there. And, you know, and it's a shame because Mike should have went down as the greatest heavyweight ever. But now I still put him up there. He's definitely in the top five. Definitely, you know.
Yeah,
you got to put Rocky as the number one greatest heavyweight because he's 49-0. So, well, this and that, we could argue or debate this forever. You know, well, I think that Tyson probably would have beat him because he's bigger and stronger. But Rocky had a heart and punched like a mule.
Well, let me ask you this, Kevin, because you just said something right now. Very interesting. One of the things I've always argued with people, I have said that Mike Tyson is one of the most interesting guys in boxing. You just said it right now. This is a guy that was 13 years old, very highly intelligent. Was this guy so intelligent he understood, listen, you know what, I went to prison. My skills have diminished. I may not be the quickest guy anymore or the hardest puncher. My heart may no longer be in this sport. I need to do something a little extra. I need to follow the Muhammad Ali trend. I need to make a little bit of noise. Was he that intelligent? I think he was.
Oh, he was that intelligent, yes. You know, the thing with Mike was when he went to see Bobby Stewart and he said, can I join the boxing club? And Bobby ignored him, said no. Then Tyson kept bothering him. So finally Bobby said, well, you know what? Your whole attitude's got to change right now. It's got to change. And your grades in school, they got to change right now. They got to become B's. And you know what happened? And this is Tyson. You know, I don't know what goes, you know, I'm not one of these mind readers. I don't like to really do it. But. Immediately, his whole attitude changed. This is coming from Bobby Stewart, so it's coming from the person's mouth. And and his grades, he became a straight A student. So that told you that Tyson wanted something. He was looking for something. And then Cus took him under his wing, and he was still on probation for the state, and he had to go see a probation officer over in Hudson once a week. Then it was once every 2 weeks. Then it got to be once a month. And, Mikey won two JO national championships, and then he should have been on the 1984 Olympic team. But, you know, those were the good days. And then when we lost Cuss, that was big. And then, again, when he married Robin, and then Jimmy had died, no one knew about it. And when we came back from fighting Tubbs in Japan, Jimmy was dead. We all flew out to L.A. to bury him. I'm guessing that probably had an effect on Mike. And then he's dealing with the women from February 1988 until the Sphinx fight, July 27th, 1988. I don't know if you noticed, but the rumor is that Robin's mother tried to grab the whole check, the whole $21 million check from the promoter, and Bill Caton stopped that from happening because he was the manager of Wreck-It.
Wow.
And then the whole summer, back and forth, and I was going on a lot of shows and always sticking up for Mike when Robin said, oh, he smacked her and hit her. And I'm saying, if he was hitting her, if you're hitting her, you're going to bust her face up. I never seen her face busted up, ever, ever. So what's that mean? I mean, she's lying.
let me ask you this, Kevin, because first of all, let me say, Kevin Rooney, renowned Hall of Famer trainer on Leave It in the Ring, Havoc Apparel is promoting us, okay? At any time, let me ask you this, at any time in you dealing with Iron Mike Tyson, okay? Dealing with Iron Mike Tyson, did you ever stop and said, I'm afraid of him?
Never. Never. That never happened. And we had one time Mike wanted to get out of the ring, and I wanted him to go 10 rounds, and he wanted to get out of the ring after six rounds. And I said, no, Mike, you're going to go 10 rounds today, remember? I was trying to he goes, no, I'm getting out. I said, no, you're not getting out. And so he tried to get out, and I blocked him. And then he walked down to the other side of the ropes, and I just followed him there. I said, Mike, get out there and spar. And he went out there and he finished the four more rounds. So it wasn't rosy posy and whatever Mike wanted. Mike and I used to run with him. I ran with him, and that's Cus taught me that. He told me how he used to run with his fighters. And back then, fighters were always looking to not want to run. And then Cus, Cus said a lot of things. I can't remember them all, but that I remember that. So. When I took over the training of him, I used to run with him all the time. When we got to Japan for the Tubbs fight, we went to bed that night, and that morning we got up and ran. So, and then we'd go to the gym when we were fighting the fights out in Vegas, when we won the WBC title from Trevor Burbick, and then we fought Bone Crusher Smith, then we fought Pinklin Thomas, then we fought Tony Tucker for the IBF fight, World Championship. And that unified all the whole belts and all that. And then we had the big money fight at that point, $21 million for Mike, and Michael Spinks got $13 million because he was considered the true champ because he had beaten Larry Holmes, which was just PR, stuff, and that was just building up the gate, and that's really what it comes down to. But my Cus left Mike with three good guys, me as a trainer and Jimmy and Bill as the managers. And Mike got sucked in by Don King. So that's a question that Mike has to answer. Kevin's not here to answer that.
Let me ask you this before I pass this on to my co-host, Iron Love Blood. I got one more question for you, really, really quick, okay?
Sure.
In the movie of Mike Tyson's latest, okay, a documentary, which was fantastic. I watched it, heartfelt, and I got to tell you, I walked away feeling, wow, I met a new Iron Mike Tyson. I understand a new Iron Mike Tyson. Is that an Iron Mike that you knew, or was this a fabricated Iron Mike Tyson that was portrayed in this film?
You know, I had never seen the film, but I heard about it. The only good thing that I heard is that he praised Customato, which who needed that praising, because it was Cus who made Tyson, nobody else. And I've heard different things, and he always talks good about Cus. And then I heard he said that he was a slave master. Now, if he's saying that, then he's calling Cus a slave master, because Cus was the one who set down all the rules, and they were followed after he died, and he set them down before he died. And here's another thing that most people don't know, and Cus went to Jimmy and Bill and ordered them, said, make sure Mike has money when he's done fighting. So what do the great Jimmy Jacobs and Bill Caton do? They take out an insurance policy that was going to mature in 1996, 7 or 8, one of them years. I'm not sure which one, but they were taking money out of his purse and putting it into that establishment, you know, on Wall Street that they had. And Mike was going to get $250,000 a year, once a year, tax-free. So here's a guy that was going to have $250,000 a year come in the mail, a check from the federal government for $250,000 tax free. That's how, and that's because Cus told Bill and Jimmy, make sure Mike has money. And that shows you how smart Cus was. And Cus was the guy that started the campaign, you know, to clean up the game. And the game had been pretty dirty forever, really, you know, up until Floyd Patterson won the title, and then Cus was showing the rest of the world how you can do it, because boxing was, you know, controlled by the underground people and big networks. That one guy out of Chicago, I can't remember his name, but in New York, Madison Square Garden was the head kingpin, if you know what I'm saying. And Cus had the guts and the brains to fight them, and he won. That's a whole other story. We can talk about that another time.
Well, you know what? I mean, literally, all defense of Mike, he broke down. He cried. He gave Customato his due. I mean, he literally said, if Customato did not die, he was lost. He said, I was lost. That was my father figure. I was completely lost. I was a child in this game of boxing with money and whatsoever. In all reality, I mean, let's go back to Don King. I mean, you feel, and really honestly, I think a lot of people feel, Don King fed this young African-American at a very young age, okay, feeding him the wrong information that the white man was doing this and doing that, and he got away with it, and he poisoned this young man at Hemingway with millions of dollars, poisoned him enough to make him believe that, guess what? You guys were doing them wrong.
I've heard that he criticized the management. He never criticized me, but he didn't like me because I always talked out against him. But the fact of the matter is that Jimmy and Bill did what Cus did, told them to do, and Mike was destined to become the greatest heavyweight ever. Now, you know, we can blame it all on Don King, because he stole the fighter just like he stole every fighter he ever had. And the only thing a couple of businessmen that, you know, earned respect said that, you know, that Don King was a very smart guy and that, you know, he did what he had to do. But what they don't say, what they never say, is that he robbed all the fighters of the out of their money. He lowered up his bank account with their money. He was like an egomaniac, a jealous person that if you were doing better than him, he want to bring you down. And that's a personality conflict that he has. And that's a fact.
But, Kevin, isn't that the American way, though? Isn't that the American way?
Well, it's not the American way coming from somebody. Normally, if you back in the Wild Wild West, somebody would be hanging. Someone would be hanging, or a lot of people would be hanging. That's not right. I mean, you can't, you know, what you said is, I disagree with that. I understand what you're saying. And, you know, that's like, you know, the federal government, they tried to bring King down, but he had good lawyers and was on tax evasion. And you know, that they should have brought him, they should have brought a charge against him for abuse. For
absolutely
abuse.
Right. You're absolutely right. In the rest of the years, you would get shot. You would call out to a duel. You would get out in the middle of the road, and you guys would shoot out and see who's the better man. But in reality, America has been built in certain type of, written laws that this is what you got to do. So the Don King really, really do something that terrible, which our forefathers before him were doing before, which was stealing something that was already been built up, has already been productive, which he walked in and said, hey, I'm the biggest shark. I'm going to take away from the smaller guy in the pond.
Well, you got a good point there. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but that doesn't make it right. It's still wrong. It's still wrong. And that's the problem. You know, we go back to 1900. The Wild West, you know. Everybody, you know, finally the Wild West was where you could do whatever you want. There was no law. So now you come in, now the West started coming to the East, to New York City particularly, and immigration people were coming over from Europe to New York City. And so there had to be the rule of law, and that was implemented by New York State, not New York City. And you had, back at the turn of the century, you had a lot of cops that were killing innocent people. So it was like the Wild West was still continuing. But boxing, you can hide that. You can hide that you're robbing from a fighter. You can go up to a fighter and tell him, listen, this is how it's going to be. And if you tell anybody, you'll never get another fight. And so what? The guy keeps his mouth shut. And that's where the fear factor comes into the game. And fear in business is always there. If someone's got power and you got to deal with that person, and the only way to get from A to B is by having him in charge of something, well, now, either I would say, well, you know what? He's a thief. I'm not going to throw him. I want to go look for another path. And that's what America needs to do in everything. I mean, we could bring up Wall Street and everything else. That's what's going on now. And you look at all this nonsense that's coming out of their mouths. Why don't you just say the truth? No one wants to say the truth. And at one point, you know, back in the early 1900s, the 1800s, you know, people did tell the truth. They did tell the truth, you know, and I don't know, you know, how you stand religiously, but, you know, Jesus Christ came down here and he said, love thy neighbor. And he set an example, and that's still followed, you know, thousands of years later. You know, that's a type of topic we could probably talk all day about. What do you think?
Well, no, I completely agree with you. Unfortunately, the world does not. You know, that's why we have politicians. That's why we have government. And you know what? That's why Mike Tyson got screwed over. So I'm going to pass the panel over to my co-host, Blood Iron Lungs. But I'm going to ask the renowned, I said, Hall of Famer, trainer, Kevin Rooney.
Hey, what's going on, Kevin?
Good. How you doing?
Doing good. I have a question for you. What year did you get involved with Mike Tyson?
1980.
Okay.
When he came to come live with Cuss, it was in 1980, and I was still in the house. And then I moved out because I got married, and so I moved out of the house. And then Tyson was in there by himself. And then I started helping Cuss. Train Tyson when he was turned like 16.
Right. Okay. I got a question for you, man. You said he should have been in the 1984 Olympics, but he lost to Tillman. I believe it was Tillman who.
Right.
How did he take that loss, man? How
he cried.
Was Raleigh?
He cried.
Did that really affect him a whole lot, though?
Well, it affected him for that moment. You know, Mike had heart. You know, he wasn't he was not this monster that he's been painted as now. But in that '84 Olympic tryouts, he fought Henry Tillman. He fought him in the box off. Well, I mean in the tournament to make the Olympic team. And when Tillman beat him the first time, Tillman had to fight him again. And if Mike had won the fight, which he did anyway, but if he had won the fight, then they would have had to fight a third time. So when they fought the second time and Mike beat him worse in the second time than he did in the first fight, and then they still gave the fight to him. This was a vendetta against Cuss by one of the higher uppers in the Amateur Boxing Association. And that's why, you know, if Mike had knocked the guys out, then there's nothing you can do about it. And I saw that happen to Mike. And then when I started taking over the gym after Cuss had died, I had my fighters. I had a lot of amateur fighters in the 80s and then into the 90s. And I still do today. I tell my fighters, listen, if you're gonna want to fight in the tournament in one of these amateurs, all amateurs. You know what? Let me just say this. We're the only sport in the world whose minor leagues have different rules, and that's a fact. That's a fact. If you play baseball in little leagues, the same as playing the major leagues. Football, basketball, tennis, golf, swimming, you name it. Every sport, minor leagues have the same rules, except boxing. Now you go figure that one out.
Did Tyson seem to me to carry a chip on his shoulder when he fought Terrell Biggs? Because did he punish
things
like that because he didn't make the Olympics? I mean, I always wondered.
Yeah,
because
yes,
he really had
right.
a chip on his shoulder in that fight, man.
Yeah, he did.
What was his
mindset
going into that fight?
He wanted to give him a beating, and he did. His mind was in every fight that Mike had with me. In that tournament, that HBO tournament, he was ready to go, including right up to the Michael Spinks fight. Even when we had a little bit of problems with the women and Jimmy dying, but Mike always did what I asked him to do. If I said, Mike, do this, use your jab, do this or that, he'd go out there and do it. He wasn't, we were a perfect match. It just, some people, start doing whatever they say and boom. Mike was very intelligent. Mike was much more smarter than people ever gave him credit for. But Cuss could see that right away. Cuss knew that right away himself. He had trouble in school, and so Cuss took him out of the school because he got him a teacher to come by, once or twice a week to just teach him. But Cuss knew that, he was very smart. He just wasn't educated. I can't say he wasn't educated on the streets, but he was a young kid when he went away, so he really didn't really know that much. But he was very smart, and then he was around Cuss, and Cuss was always trying to build up his self-esteem. Cuss could see that Mike had a character defect, and that being he'd get nervous like anybody else. I mean, Cuss always talked about fear, and when there was fights that Mike cried at, and the corner man helped him there at that time, and Mike got over that. But he was a machine when he went through everybody, and he should have went on. I just say these things because I want people to really know how what a great fighter he was. Get rid of all the Robin Givens. That's all part of it too. We don't just throw it aside, but. That was the poison. That started it going, and Jimmy Jacobs dying, that more or less finished it. Then the women had his head, and Mike was like, didn't really know where to go, I guess. And then King stole him away to Ohio and put him in whatever he did with him. I really don't know, to tell you the truth. I know that happened, but I don't know what he did or this, that, or the other thing. But he would have been, and he should have been, and just like Cuss said it, because there's the next heavyweight champion of the world. The first day that he saw him spar him, Bobby Stu, when he was 13 years old. Now, how's that for, tunnel vision?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. He's a historian. Mike was a historian himself. He watched a lot of film. And I was wondering what his mindset was going into the Larry Holmes fight. That had to be a big fight for him, like a passing of the torch. What was
right,
his mindset
that's right.
going in, into that fight?
But he was in great shape, and he destroyed Holmes. He knocked him cold in the third round, I think it was. And Larry shouldn't have been in there. And here's a funny thing. You know, Jimmy Jacobs says to me before the fight, before the weigh-in, a couple of days before the fight, and he says, you know, this is Larry Holmes' biggest purse. And I said, what are you talking about? Because we both were getting like $3 million in change, Mike and Larry Holmes, because he was, you know, the you know, defending champion, the real champion for all those years when he was trying to break Rocky Marciano's record. And then King put something in there because Larry didn't want to do something. I'm not sure about all that. But, Mike came to fight. He was in great shape for that fight. And every fight he had with me, he was in great shape. Great shape. He never, ever. The first time I ever saw him in bad condition was the Buster Douglas fight. And when I saw that fight, when I saw him getting in the ring, I said, oh, I said, boy, this guy's not in shape at all. And Buster Douglas had dedicated the fight to his mother, and he was in shape. And, I mean, you can look at that fight. Now, and here's my point. Mike took probably one of the worst beatings that anyone had ever taken. Maybe Joe Frazier in the third fight with Muhammad Ali because of the cut eye, but even that, they shouldn't have stopped that fight. But you know what can I say?
Well, Buster Douglas, he was a big guy. A lot of people after y'all fought, I believe it was Mitch Green. Y'all fought Green. A lot of people said that y'all wanted to take a step back because y'all thought that you might be moving them too fast. Is there any truth to that?
No, there's no truth to that at all. We were moving forward already. We had the fight with what's his name? Tills. What's the heavyweight he fought?
James Tillis.
That fight went 10 rounds on national TV. That was a national TV fight. And that when he went to 10 rounds in that fight, then Jimmy and Bill said, okay. And then we took the Green fight. And Green, all he wanted to do was hold on and just try to tie him up. And Mike won every round. Mike won every round in that fight. And then Green goes here and here and saying all this nonsense, and that's all it was nonsense. Mike beat him every round. He won every round on the scorecards. So, no, at that point, we were going forward. And then we jumped out to Vegas, and we fought that other former champion, who was King's Fighters. This is when we started fighting all King's Fighters. When we entered that HBO tournament, all the fighters in that tournament to unify the title, except for Mike, all the other fighters were Don King's Fighters. So we beat every one of Don King's Fighters, and then we fought Spinks. And then Bill had, we were going to go across Europe and have five more fights in Europe and come back and fight Evander Holyfield for the Undisputed Heavyweight Championship because he was the number one contender at that time. But that's when Robin went on the Barbara Walters show and everything. The fight got pushed back, and then it got pushed back to November, and then I was on a show, Madison Square Garden, and they asked me questions about, you know, Don King, what's going on, and I said, the problem here is that Don King is trying to steal the fighter because we beat all his fighters. And that's a fact. That's the truth. I said that. It's the truth.
Okay. Do you think that Tyson would have held up good in today's era against the bigger guys? Because it seemed like he always had a little bit of a problem with some of the bigger guys, man.
I totally disagree with that. He didn't have any problem with any of them big guys. You got to think back. When he was with me, Cuss, and Jimmy and Bill, and then Cuss died, he was 10-0. And then Jimmy died, and we had the Michael Spinks fight with Bill Caton, original guy put in place by Cuss D'Amato. Mike was 35-0 with, I believe, 21 or 19 knockouts in the first round, and he was undefeated. He had beaten everybody that was put up and put out there. And people could say, well, who did he fight? We fought whoever was out there to fight, and he annihilated them all. So the fact that he's annihilating all these guys he's got to get some kind of credit for that, no?
Oh, yeah, he gets credit. Oh, hey, he's one of my favorite fighters. What do you think, when you saw him fight James Buster Douglas, now you got to admit you were surprised when he lost, even though you knew he was out of shape. What was going through your mind after the fight?
No, it wasn't after the fight. It was right before the fight when I saw that he wasn't in shape.
So you're saying that you pretty much felt he was going to lose the fight before he even fought?
No, I wouldn't say that. I said once he started taking the beating, when it happened. Hold on 1 second.
Some guy gave it to me. Not yours. Some guy gave it to me. Did I call this? I'm talking to somebody right now.
Okay, hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay.
Let's pass it on already. Let's go down to Strikeheart. Strikeheart, you got a renowned Hall of Famer trainer, Kevin Rooney.
Yeah.
Anything you want to say, brother?
Yeah. Let me just start by saying I was a little bit interested to hear with your portion there with 97 Rough. That you decided not to see the Tyson documentary. What's the reason for that?
Well, I was told that he said disparaging things about Jimmy and Bill. He was saying, and I'm quoting someone that told me that, but I know that it's true. He's on one of them videos and he's saying that he was a slave master. What does that mean? What is that supposed to mean? And when you say you're a slave master, how can he say that? So. That's why I haven't looked at any of those films, because it sounds like that the people that are making these films, they're looking to make money off of Mike, just like everyone has been doing since he left us. You know, before he left us, he was going to be well taken care of, especially when he retired. He was going to have an annuity that was going to pump in. Put there on by customized orders to Jimmy Jacobs and Bill Caton. So he said, make sure Mike has money when he's done. And they took out this annuity, and it was going to mature in 1996, 7 or 8. And Tyson had King dissolve it, put it in the paper to lawyers that were defending him in his case. That rape case that he had, that bogus race case, that's how that went down.
Okay. Yeah, and I was interested too. When I know you obviously tried to not be fired by Mike Tyson and have him stolen from you. When was the last time you had actually tried to get back together with Tyson and fix things and train him still?
I never
did. Is
that
something you tried? You never did.
Never did. No. When it came, the way it came down, I had my lot went through my mind. I was down in the city. I had my two young kids with me then. They were young kids then. You know, now they're they're in their 20s. And it was for Christmas in 1988. And I got the New York Post, and then right on the back said Myth Tyson fires Rooney. Now I had an agreement, a handshake agreement with the manager, with Mike, and Mike knew it. We shook hands, and we cussed him out way before he passed away. So when I saw all that, I was mad, and I called up all the numbers that I had that where I was talking to Mike. And all those numbers were disconnected. So I sat for about a week or so thinking about it. And then I said, I'm going to bring this to a lawyer and see what they got to say. And that's what I did. And it was more principle than anything else. It wasn't about the money. You know, I ended up suing for like $50 million, and I didn't get anything near there. So right there, but about the money, it was about the principle. And I was trying to make a statement, and it had a lot more to do with not just me being his trainer in the way I felt it. You know, it was a constitutional, thing. You know, we made an agreement. I shook everybody's hand, and, that's a lost art nowadays. You see little kids around here now, they don't know what you're talking about. When you shake somebody's hand, you give them your word. You get, and that's what would be by cuss and by Jimmy Jacobs and by Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson said it himself. He said, "You'll always be my trainer." And then he has the paper and it says, "Miss Tyson fires Rooney." What would you have done?
Right. Now, obviously, you guys are running the same circles, and this was forever ago. Has there ever been a time where you've bumped into Mike Tyson, or have you not spoken to him since then?
No, I haven't spoken to him since then. It's not. I mean, it's one of those, like, maybe we're both kind of stubborn, and you know, I don't have his numbers, you know, and so there's no, like, you know, and why would I even call him? You know what I mean? But I hold no resentments, not one at all. And really, it always goes back to that Cuss didn't have enough time with him. He was with Cuss for like 5 years, you know. And most of that was, you know, amateur boxing. He won the JOs a couple of times. Then he won the National Golden Gloves. Then he almost made the 1984 Olympics. And then Cuss turned him pro in 1985. And you know who worked his corner? Me. And, you know, I worked another fighter's corner, and then you know what I did that hardly no one's ever – it's been done before, but it hasn't been done in a long time that I know of. And then I took off all my clothes and got into my boxing trunks, and I fought the main event on his first two pro fights. So I just, you know, pumping myself up. But that's a fact. That's a fact. That's how – I mean, that's how close everybody was, you know. It was like, okay, well, I will do this. And then Cuss got sick. And, you know, when he died, you know, I said to him, I said, "Mike, you know, we got good," because Cuss had made a prediction. He said, "There's the next heavyweight champion in the world." And so I said, "Mike, you know, we got to fight right away. You know, let's do it. Let's just get, you know, we mourn this passing." And then we fought. I think it was like 2 weeks later. I think we were down in Texas. And Mike starts somebody in the first or second round. And so that put us, you know, that kept us on the path. And we kept going and going. And then I believe Mike was like 27-0 when we entered that HBO tournament. And then we knocked every fighter we fought was a Don King fighter. And we knocked them all out. Uh-huh. And then we went to the Sphinx fight. And then he had married Robin Gibbons earlier that year. And then, you know, the summer came. And Jimmy had died. So there was a lot of, you know, coulda, shoulda,
right,
wouldas,
right,
you know.
Right.
But, you know, I'm not going to do that. I mean, you know.
I wish that he had
tried to get in touch with me. Like, I'm the trainer, you know. I'm like, you know, and to me and him, he was like my, you know, we were like family, the Customato family. So, I'm the older brother. You're the younger brother, you know. And now, if you got a problem with, you know, and that was all made up crap that they were saying. I was saying things about the women, or that's all nonsense. I always stuck up for Mike. And I'll give you this one little, when we were around Japan fighting Tubbs and the women came out because Mike had married in late 1987. This is 1988 now. We're in Japan and the women come, you know, a week before the fight and we're up and down the hall. We had just finished working out or whatever it was. I really don't remember exactly what we do, but I remember this. And there's Robin. And so Robin's in front of me and Mike's to the left of me in the hallway. And I said, wow, Robin, look how good you look. Whoa. You know, she's supposed to be pregnant. She's supposed to be 3 months pregnant. And I'm looking at Mike, and I said, "Yeah, Robin, look, you know, you look great." I'm looking right at Mike. I'm trying to send him a message. And she goes to me, "What are you trying to say? I'm not pregnant?" I said, "No, I didn't say that, Robin. I didn't say that. I said, you look great." And I'm staring at him, you know, trying to tell him, maybe you should investigate this. And then what happened? That rolled over. And then she supposedly had a miscarriage in, I think it was like April or May of 1988, and the fight was June 27th down at Trump's place. So as it turns out, she never was pregnant. So who's playing who? Who's playing who? And then, you know, you can make excuses, but, you know, I don't make excuses, you know. And, yeah, well, coulda, shoulda, woulda, yeah. I should have done that. I should have tried to do that or this or that. But, you know, sometimes, you know, I was younger then, too. You know, you got that pride, you know. I accept responsibility. Maybe I should have called him. Maybe I should have went out to Vegas. But it wasn't the right thing at that moment. And, you know, I don't, you know, that's just me.
Okay. I have one more question about Mike Tyson, and then I actually wanted to ask you a question about your own pro career. But my last question about you and Mike Tyson, the last thing I'm interested in myself, was there a point at which you just stopped following Mike's career, or did you still follow?
No, I always follow his career. I can remember when we were watching the Buster Douglas fight. I was with my girlfriend, and we were at her house, and we were watching the fight. And this is like the first, the second round, like, you know, nothing was really good. Like Buster was like a little nervous himself, and Mike was really nervous because he knew he wasn't in any kind of shape. And it was like, okay, like, who's going to do anything? And then if you remember, or if you ever watch the fight again, what happens is Douglas, he starts popping jabs and starts hitting them. And when that started, the first, second round, then it just continued on. And that's when my girlfriend started, you know, cheering on Buster. I said, wait. I said, Megan, I don't want Mike to lose. I don't want him to lose. And she shut right up. And what happened then, then Mike got so frustrated when he threw that right uppercut and dropped Buster Douglas. And then Don King tried to start a scandal that the referee, you know, shortchanged the this or that and all this nonsense. But he got up on time. I'm trying to say he didn't beat the count. He beat the count. If you remember, he bangs the floor. Like, he's so mad at himself, and he waits for the count. He gets up like at 7-8, and he's up. And then the round ended. I think that was the eighth round. And then the ninth round, or it was the ninth round and then the tenth round. And then the next round, Douglas goes out there and beats the hell out of Tyson and knocks him out. If you remember the fight, that's how it went down. So, and then when I was watching that, I wasn't saying, oh, yeah, this is great. I was like, oh, my God, why? You know, oh, geez, you know, I felt bad. You know, I always, you know, me and Mike were put here to, you know, do what Customato, you know, foresaw. And it's just, you know, that's how life is. And then he goes that way, I go this way, everybody goes a different way.
And how hard was it for you to watch the rest of it, too? Because, I mean, pretty much from that point on, he had a very tragic career. And I mean, I don't think anybody would argue that it wouldn't have turned out a lot different had you not still been there. So how difficult was that for you? Not just Buster Douglas, but all the rest of it as well.
Well, I'm the type of person that first he knocked out a couple of guys when he was with King, and I was at one of the fights out in Vegas, and I was like, okay, but I can. He himself might put himself into that position. And that's just the grinding, this and that, and it's all about money at that point. And
fair enough.
I wasn't cheering that he was getting his ass kicked. I never went against Mike. I always wanted to see him win, and I always knew that if he was in shape. But what the things that I heard, and you know how it is, you hear things on the street that they say this, they say that, to this, to that, to that, and. And I heard all that about Mike, and I just, you know, he lost his will. He lost the will to want to fight. He didn't want to fight anymore. If he wanted to fight, especially in his last couple of fights, he got knocked out by that one fighter, that white kid. And he hit Mike, and Mike just went down. And to me, that was like Mike was just sitting there, and he's like, you know, well, when I get up, I'm going to get a check for like $3 or $4 million, whatever he got for that fight. So, and that's what happens to all fighters, you know. And Mike was a historian about boxing, especially heavyweights, and used to watch all the tapes that Cuss had in his house. And he watched them all, Joe Louis, Jack Johnson, Rocky Marciano, Walcott, Dempsey. He loved Dempsey, you know. He actually loved Dempsey when he first came around. He used to watch all of them fights because, you know, Jack was an aggressive fighter. And Mike, at his best, he was an aggressive fighter. He was quick, elusive, and punched hard. I mean, that's the key to Mike's career. He punched hard. I don't care who you are. You know, like they said, well, what if it was him and Ali? Well, Ali took a great shot. But if Tyson was able to hit Muhammad like Joe Frazier hit him in the first fight, if Mike hit him, Muhammad probably would have been knocked out. But it's hard to say because Joe had a good left hook too, you know what I mean? And that's just, I'm just fantasizing that. I'm not making any, you know, formal statement.
Right, yeah, yeah. It's all hypothetical.
Yeah,
but,
it's all, yeah.
In your career, you actually had a pretty decent record yourself, and I was just interested about one fight in particular. You had gone 15-0 early in your career, and then you ran into Davey Moore, who at the time, although he later became the junior middleweight champion, was only 6-0. Did you go into that fight having any clue that you were going to lose, or did you expect to win?
No, I expected to win, and I got screwed. I got screwed. And there's no question, and then that's why I started fighting on ESPN, because somebody was apologizing to Jimmy and Bill for what had happened to me in that fight, and I remember that fight. And I cut Davey, like, in the first or second round. I think it was the first round. A pretty good, nice cut. And I was giving him a beating. And then I think it was a 6-round fight. I'm not really sure, or an 8-round fight. But anyway, he hit me, and I wobbled a little bit, and I went to the ropes, and I got the tape. And on the tape, and then Davey opens up all the punches. He got every punch he threw, I made him miss. Every single one. And then the referee jumped in and just stopped the fight. And it's on the tape. You have to really watch it. And you can see, I'm looking. I said, what are you doing? I said right to him, what are you doing? Like, why are you starting a fight? I had that fight. I won every round. And then, you know, whatever. And that's like the politics of boxing and I forget. I think Davey Moore, I don't know if he was fighting with the Duvis then or not. I really can't remember. But they never expected. I don't know where they, you know, me and Davey fought four times as amateurs. And to tell you the truth, you know, I beat him all four times. But for the record, it was 2-2. But I beat him in a tournament, the Spanish something Golden Gloves they had in New York back then, and I beat him in the finals for that, and I beat him out in Ohio. They have an event out there every year, and I beat him out there when there was nobody from New York, no officials from New York that knew him, and I whooped his butt out there as an amateur. So
I'd love to continue talking with you. I'll just get you to say one last thing before I pass it along. What is it exactly that made you eventually decide to walk away from your pro career to become, you know, the assistant trainer for Customato?
Well, here's the thing, and I was just talking to somebody else about this. That, you know, when Tyson turned pro, I worked his corner, I worked another fighter's corner, and then I fought the main event and I won. His first two pro fights, I did that. One was in March or whatever, I can't really remember. And then another one was the next month. And then I fought in June down in Atlantic City, and I got cut, and they stopped the fight again on me. And was there then when Cuss got sick, he told Jimmy, and Jimmy talked to me. Jimmy said to me, he said, Cuss said for me to tell you not to fight no more and just concentrate on the fighter. And I said, well, what if I want to fight? Because I was in good shape then. And he said, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. And meaning, he kept me so busy with Michael. Mike was fighting, like, you know, once a month, leading up to everything. So that's why. Because I was, you know, Cuss had said that to me. And, you know, I said, well, and you know, I was making better money with Mike than I would be making myself. But,
right.
Yeah, that's
well, it's
that's,
been,
the, that's
it's been
the answer
nice
to that.
Talking to you, man. I'm,
same here.
Unfortunately, though, we have time, so I got to pass it along to somebody else so they get a chance to talk to you as well.
Okay, thank you.
You though.
Thank you very much.
So I guess David Chen, I don't know if you have a few questions or Chris.
Well, I'll jump in there since I don't know where David went.
No, Chris, go ahead.
Yeah. Real quick question, Kenny Atlas, did you get along with him, and do you have any kind of relationship with him at this time, like friendship or acquaintances or anything?
No.
So, like, you just never really got along with the guy, or?
No, there's a whole story that, you know, that is out there that you know, me and Teddy, we were friends, and I... I got him to come up there. His mother called me up one day, and then Cuss told me that, well, why don't you just use Teddy as your trainer, as your corner man, because I don't never work the corners. And I said, okay, I don't care. And that's how that went down. And then when all that other stuff went down, you know, that was it.
Okay, and real quick on your career, you fought Alexis Arguello, the late great fighter. What do you remember most about that fighter that night in general? Like, what's the first memory or the thing that stands out the most to you about that night?
Well, the first thing is that I changed the game plan on my own, and I just went out there and decided to slug it out with him, because I figured that was my best chance, was if I could hit him, you know, before he hit me. And then with it's funny because I was in talking with somebody last week, and they said, you know, I saw that fight, that Aguayo fight, and you won that first round. And I've had a couple of people that told that to me, that, you know, I won the first round. I won, and then the second round I looked at the tape, and in the second round I took some hard shots from him. And then there was 3 seconds left in the round, he maneuvered himself and got in front of me, and I threw a jab and missed, and then I went to throw another jab, and he came over with a right hand and caught me right on the button, and I plopped down, you know, I sat right down on my butt, and I struggled to get up, but I couldn't beat the count. And so then, and it's funny because, you know, Cuss had mentioned things like this, and that a lot of times, like, when a person gets knocked out, they don't remember it. And so I was in the dressing room. This is what I remember about this fight. And I'm in the dressing room after the fight. It turns out after the fight, and it's like, it's probably like almost an hour after the fight was over. And I looked around the room, and I said, oh, my God, I lost the fight, didn't I? And everyone just looked at me, you know, and they, yeah, they went, yeah, you lost. So it was, you know, and then, you know, with that, you know, I, what can I tell you? The guy was a world champion, and, you know, I just figured that I had to try to knock him out because that I thought in my own head that was my best chance to go out there and knock him out. But that didn't happen, so what are you going to do?
Right. All right, David, go ahead and take it.
And Mr. Rooney, we've been talking a little while now, and something I liked about what you said with me is you were talking about the fact that Mike Tyson was such a great fighter is that he had elusive aggression. Can you tell a little bit about that?
Well, sure. I mean, and again, like, you know, I bring Cuss's name up a lot because he deserves all the credit. And Cuss always taught you his style, that style, the peekaboo style that Floyd Patterson had and Jose Torres had it, probably the best, and then Mike was very good at it. I was very good at it. I was good at it. Let's put it that way. I was good. Jose was the best. Floyd was very good, and then Mike was very good at it. And to be elusive means to, you know, put pressure on your opponent, and as you're doing that, make him throw punches at you where you can make him miss. And when you make him miss, he starts to get frustrated, and now a fighter like Mike, who could punch as hard as he did, well, once he made you miss and he dug in a body shot or a head shot, you felt it right away, and many times you get knocked out right away too. And that's, you know, that was, it's almost like, see, Cuss grew up around boxing. He had his father boxed in the 1800s, late 1800s. He had a brother, Jerry, who boxed. And when Cuss was a young kid, like 12, 10, 11, 12, he used to carry Jerry's bag to the gym and watch everybody sparring. Cuss sparred himself. Cuss lost vision in his eye, his right eye. When he was a kid, he had gotten into a fight with a man, Cuss is like 13, 12, 13, whatever he is, and some guy was picking on all the kids, and he stood up to the guy, and he lost the vision in his eye, and he spent his whole life trying to get it back, and he finally got it back. I mean, that's how Cuss was. He was a genius, and he believed in the body healing itself, and he believed that you had the power in your mind, your subconscious, to do all these things. Like, if you set a goal for yourself and you really, you know, concentrate about it and do it, it will happen. That's what Cuss was like. Cuss was a genius. And anyone who knew him really knew him, because Cuss was also, you know, he was a hard person to get to know, really, unless, like, you had some direct contact with him and you know, became friends with him, which is why I felt lucky enough that, you know, I had a father. So Cuss was never like a father figure to me, but he was like my best friend, you know, and that's hard. Like, when I went up there, I was 18, 19 years old, and he was 66 years old. And then he ended up dying when, you know, he was 77, something like that. But, yeah, Cuss was a good friend and a smart man.
Mr. Rooney was really
good. I can't say enough about him.
Absolutely. We're really happy that you came on the air with us and gave us a great interview. Thank you very much for taking your time to talk with us today. We know you got plans. We want you to get on with your evening. It's late here on the East Coast. So thank you once again for calling in.
Thank you very much.
All right. Have a good night now.
Bye-bye.
Well, everybody, that was Kevin Rooney. Got a lot of stories. You know, when I first met him at Baltimore Boxing, I ended up talking to him for a good hour or so, and he's always got good stories. You know, he can go on forever, as you can tell. And he's got a lot to offer, and one of those guys in the game that you want to listen to once in a while. And
you know what's funny? It's one of those guys in the game that you can listen to all day.
Absolutely.
And not get tired of. You know?
Hey, Dave, we got a Baltimore fighter right now. I think we might have Henry Hurricane Mays. Henry, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right.
What's up, Henry? How you doing, brother?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, man. I'm enjoying. We just had a Kevin Rooney. This is a renowned Hall of Famer trainer that worked with Mike Tyson. But let's talk a little bit about your career now. I know we got a short window real quick before we have Israel Vasquez. But let's talk about a little bit about you, man. I mean, why right now the world really honestly should take a turn and look at what the Hurricane is doing at this moment?
Well, you know, right now I'm just training and looking forward to, you know, the opportunity to show everybody on a big scale what I can do.
What weight right now, Henry, are you working at this moment?
My heavyweight, 175.
Now, that's a good division right now, because that division, at one time, used to be kind of cold, but it's starting to get hot. I mean, people are starting to really take a turn in cheek of watching this division, and there's some prospects coming out hard. So, knowing that this is starting to get some heat, how are you going to bring more coal to keep it harder?
Well, you know, it's been a while. I first started out at super middleweight, and that weight really didn't agree with me. You know, I lost a lot of strength to get down to that weight, and this light heavyweight, I'm stronger and more durable, and more fights in the game. I've learned, you know, ring savvy and things, and I believe I can bring that to the table, you know, along with my natural attributes.
Let me ask you this. What are some of the guys that you have trained with right now to keep you in preparation or keep you even motivated? I mean, as a guy that's coming up, what's keeping you motivated right now to stay in this hard game of boxing?
Well, you know, some of the guys at the gym with me, you know, we have people like Mike Dietrich and Steve Villa and Elias Bulabasis, you know, we've all been there, like, since the start when I started boxing, like, 6-7 years ago, and now we're all pros, and we're coming along, and that's, like, now, like, I'm a big brother, you know, so that's, like, a motivation, and, you know, by my age, I know my career doesn't have too much longer. I have something left in me, but not too much longer. You want to make a statement before you leave.
Absolutely. You know what? When I was an amateur fighter and I was thinking about coming out in the pros, obviously you're already doing that. And you know, being a fighter, we have a mentality of having this, I'm indestructible, I'm number one. The reason why I'm number one, I'm going to make my point, you know. And when I was coming up, there was a guy by the name of Shug Yellow. And I wanted to show how yellow this guy is. There has got to be a particular person at the moment, okay? Particular guy at the moment, you know what I'm saying? There's got to be a Tim Cucci and there's got to be a Shug Yellow in your career at this moment where you're thinking, you know what, this guy doesn't belong. This guy does not belong in the same breath tone of my name. What can I do to break this dude off, and what can I say to the world that, you know what, this is here. This is me, I'm here, and I'm breaking through at this moment.
Oh, well, one name definitely comes to mind. That's Mike the Persecutor Pascal. You know, we've been doing this dance for going on now 3 years, you know. Supposed to fight. No, not going to fight. You know, you get scheduled. Posters come out, everything, and then no fight, you know.
How frustrating is that for you, though? You know, as a guy that wants to fight him, I mean, what you're thinking? I know you're thinking, like, okay, what do I got to do to fight this guy? I mean, why doesn't he want to fight you?
Hey, he must be scared of a loss. That's basically what it is, you know. I understand his mentality, though, because it'd be a tough fight for him, and the money's not there like other couple fights he had, you know, ESPN and things like that, so I understand that mentality, but you're a fighter,
but
so...
is that the mentality of a warrior? I mean, really, honestly, I mean, you sound like a guy right now, you're like, hey, I'm going to lay it down the line. I'm going to take it out there. I'm a kind of guy that, you know what, hey, let's fight, let's do this. If I get an O, I get an O. Is that the mentality that you feel this guy got?
No, that's not a mentality he has. Not at all.
Is that the mentality you believe that needs to be in this business? Or is that the mentality that he has saying that, well, you know what, I'm on ESPN, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, so you know what, I should at least get a pink pass because I'm trying to make a living. Or your mentality is like, screw the living, man. This is about legacy. This is about being a warrior.
Yeah, well, you know, well, that's where the state of boxing is right now. You know, everybody wants to chase the dollars, or they want the most money for the fight that the least risk. So that's the state where boxing is now. That's why, you know, you got the UFC and stuff is on. They have shows every month, and people are going to see that because everybody's doing this song and dance. In boxing.
Absolutely. I agree with you. And I think that's what's hurting boxing. Like I said before, I don't think UFC is hurting boxing. I think boxing is hurting boxing itself. I'm going to pass the panel real quick to my co-host, Iron Lung Blood. Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, man. What's going on, bro?
What's up?
Hey, what's your record right now, brother?
8-6-3.
Okay, so you got any fights? What do we need to look out for next? What's your next fight all about? And do you know anything about your opponent?
I was scheduled to fight this coming Saturday, but a calf injury held me out of it. So I'm just healing that up, training, and I suspect that like next month or so, I'll be ready to go.
Okay, I hear that. Explain your style. What kind of fighter are you, man?
Well, when I first started my career, I was basically mostly aggressive, you know.
Right.
And then I started to learn to move more. And I naturally counterpunch, so I like to move and counterpunch, but I can also be aggressive. You know, I can come forward when it needs to be. So, I don't know, I think I'm more like what they would call a boxer puncher.
Word. That's right. Okay, so what's your plan? What's your motivation, man? I mean, what's your destiny? What's your goal, man? Goal, that's the word I'm looking for. What is your goal, man? Are you looking to become a major contender? You looking for this world championship? You going to the top?
I'm trying to go as far. Yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to go as far as, you know, my body can take me, you feel me? I want to get out there. I want to show everybody what I can do, and... Let's see what happens.
I heard that, brother. I'm passing on to one of the other guys on the panel.
Justin Strikers, go ahead, brother.
All right. One thing when we first hear about a guy for the first time is we always want to know who inspired you to do boxing in the first place. Who's the guy who you would say is your favorite boxer, maybe a guy you model yourself after as well?
I have two favorite boxers. That would be Bernard Hopkins and James Toney.
Two of the bad boys. those are some bad boy personalities there, brother.
Yeah. I just love their styles, you know.
Yes, sir.
What is it about those guys that you like so much?
Because
Bernard Hopkins is one of my favorite fighters, too, so I'm on the same boat with you there.
A lot of guys like, you know, the super aggressive guy, the guy that's always first. But I like the guy that can counterpunch and defend himself. And those two guys have the best defense out there, you know. And their skill, and they know how to think in the ring.
Uh-huh.
Toney versus Hopkins, prime for prime, who win it?
Excuse me?
Toney versus Hopkins, prime for prime, middleweight, who wins their fight?
Oh, man.
Let's say the Toney who fought Michael Nunn versus Hopkins at his best at middleweight.
I have to get that. I had to get that one to Hopkins. I had to get that to B-Hop.
Word. I was going to ask you who you thought was the best light heavyweight, since that's what it sounds like you're fighting at, but I don't have to ask you that now. You're obviously going to say Bernard Hopkins. So my other question for you is, it looks like the rematch between Bernard Hopkins and Roy Jones Jr. is finally going to happen. You have any comment on that? Are you excited or not?
I'm excited, but I mean, it's like, it's too long. It took too long to happen, you know? So it's like, both fighters aren't going to have that same spark that you had seen 5-6 years ago. But
I don't know if we won't see the same spark. I think my biggest thing is that Roy Jones probably isn't the fighter he was 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And at some point, Bernard Hopkins won't be. But there's one thing that's for sure, man. They're going to have a lifelong hatred of each other. So that still might make it an exciting fight. That's my opinion on it.
Yeah, I think they're both going to bring it, though. It's going to be an exciting fight. They're going to bring it.
Right. I'll pass it along as well. So I guess, Chris, go ahead and take it away, brother.
Yeah, I just have two questions about your career. I'm looking at your record, and it shows that you faced a guy, Willie Williams, 3 times in your career. What's the story behind that?
Actually, I faced him 6 times in my career. We faced 3 times as amateurs and then 3 times in the pros. And the 3 times in the pros, it was 2 draws, a 6-round draw, then an 8-round draw. And then I got the win on 3rd.
So is this one of those situations like a Gotti Ward where you guys have respect for one another after being in the ring so many times together, or is it a bit of a rivalry?
I mean, it's a rivalry, but we have respect for each other. You know, I respect Willie Williams. You know, he's a good fighter, and I've known him since the amateurs, and we've actually trained together, helped each other spar to get ready for fights and everything. So, it's no hatred, but, you know, we're both like heavyweights. We both want to win. We're both in Baltimore, so it's a rivalry, but we have respect for each other.
Right. My one other question is, it seems like you kind of got a later start to your career in boxing. Is there any reason in particular why that was?
Where I grew up at on the Eastern Shore in Maryland, there was no boxing around. You know, I played all the other sports. I had been interested in fighting since my youth, but never had a chance. And then when I went to Baltimore, an adult, then I finally had that chance, you know, to box.
Right. All right, go ahead and take it, Dave.
All right, Henry, we talked a lot before, so I'm going to keep it brief, man. But, you know, when you were coming up, what was some of the things that came naturally to you? But also, what are some of the things that you thought, man, this is a hard lesson, you know, something you might not have considered before you picked up boxing, but then you realized, hey, this set of skills is going to take me a while to get?
Oh yeah. One thing is learning how to get hit and not get angry. You know, that's the one thing that took me a while to get. And the boxer game was when I would get hit, then I would get angry and lose control. You know, and had to learn to keep control of that.
Last year, you fought Willis Lockett in D.C., and it ended up being a very funny no contest. Can you talk a little bit about that, the story behind that?
Well, like I said, I had a lot of trouble making that super middleweight weight. So I dried out and made that weight, and I was very weak. But right in the first round, I caught him with a straight right, which staggered him around the ring. He staggered around the ring for like 10 seconds. The ref went over, held him up, gave him a standing eight. In Maryland, D.C., there's no standing eight count. So if he thought the fighter could not defend himself, he was supposed to call the fight.
So how does it make you feel, man, knowing that you probably had this guy in that fight, but due to, you know, the funny things that come up in boxing, and, you know, this was it. On this night, you're that guy. How'd you feel about that?
It was upsetting, but I've been through this before, you know, so it was upsetting, but it's no surprise. I know the type of things that happen. The refs make mistakes. Commissions make mistakes. So it was nothing out of the ordinary, actually.
Yeah, I got you, man. I can vouch for Henry right now. His right hand is, you know, it hurts because they put me in the ring with him one time to get him a couple of rounds, and I did it for about 2 minutes, and then all he had to do was give me one. All he had to do was give me one, and I had to walk out of that ring. So, Henry, I'm really glad you got on the phone with us, man, to talk with us today. Take your time out.
All right.
All right, have a good night, man. Good luck with your career,
brother.
David Chen, do we got Israel Vasquez on the line, brother?
Not right now. I'm still looking out for Luis Collazo's manager, Norman Lurik, and I am looking out for Mr. Vasquez. I'm looking out for both their numbers. But we do have some fight fans on the line. We got Rob Riddler from Puerto Rico, who's been the quiet man this whole time. Rob, are you there?
Oh, man. What's going on, Rob Riddler? Rob Riddler? He sounds like he got some pee-pee in his mouth. What's going on, brother? You okay?
Speak up, Rob.
Oh, Rob, you know
Rob, what's going on, man? Sounds like you got some, either you got pee-pee or you got a weenie in your mouth. Either one. It's cracking.
All right, Rob is going to have to take care of his business, I guess. We got a caller from the area code 619. Caller, you on the air?
Carlito, what up, brother?
Hello?
Yeah, who's this, brother?
Hello, can you hear me?
Go ahead, man. Speak your mind. Speak your mind. What's going on?
Oh, I didn't even know I was on the air. I didn't push the one button.
You're on the air now, man. You got anything to say, buddy?
All right, thank you. Yeah, man, I've been listening to you guys for a while. I catch you guys on YouTube. All you guys, actually. I didn't even know you guys were linked up until just recently. So I knew, I guess I was looking in all the right places.
See, this is what we got to do better on, Dave. We got to make sure people know that we're doing this stuff. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I had all y'all got blood on there. I got all you guys, man.
Real talk. What's your YouTube screen name?
Damien B. Cool.
Damien B. Cool.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I remember.
But I called.
That sound familiar.
But I called for Dave, though. That's the main one, was the Mayweather.
What's up, brother? What's cracking, man? What's going on? What you got?
Yeah, I mean, I got my boys at work. We talk about boxing all the time, and the haters on Mayweather. That's my thing.
What you got? I mean, what we talking about? I mean, hater on Mayweather. What's your thing?
I mean, look, he got a big mouth. We all know that. He talk a lot of trash, but he's holding down the welterweight division. Ain't nobody can beat him.
Whoa!
Wait. Big mouth about what though? I mean, your boy holding down the walk division, but I mean, come on, he just fought a light heavyweight. A lightweight. So how's that to beat a big mouth though?
Look, come on, Mark. He just destroyed the last couple of dudes he fought.
That's the last. How many years ago was that though? 2 years ago.
He just whooped Diaz. Whooped him bad, right?
So what does that matter? So why? Let me ask you this. So why can't your boy fight a colossal? Why can't your boy fight a Kaladi? Why can't your boy fight a supposedly? Let me say this. A supposedly shot Cotto. Why can't your boy do that? Instead,
he ain't fight
told,
Diaz either,
fight
brother. He ain't fight Diaz. Just let you know.
But look, yeah. The main reason why I caught though was the one main reason was the Mosley thing, the Mosley jumping all in the ring.
So what's wrong with that? I mean, let me ask you this,
dog. What do you work at?
I know, but where do you work at?
I work in a prison.
Okay, you work in the prison, okay? So let's say you want to become, what is that? What do you call that when you're in a prison? When you want to become the head of the household, okay, the shot caller of the prison. Now, let me ask you this. Now, when you want to move up ranking, you obviously got to do something to do that, right? To get more pay, right? So that's exactly what you're the same Mosley did. So you're going to hit on this man because he decided to say, you know what, man, I'm tired of sitting down just being a prison guard. I want to become the main man in the main lobby, so I'm going to step up and say something.
It ain't happening. The boy want a check. I want a check, too. I mean, he got about one or two more fights left. He hanging out in Mayweather's house in Las Vegas for the last 2 years, looking, peeping through his window, seeing if he's training or not. You know, I mean, how come he can't make it happen for himself?
I got a question for you, man.
Wait, guys, let him talk.
I don't mean to interrupt, but, you know, I'm running the switchboard, and I believe we got Normal Lurik on real quick. So let's talk to Mr. Lurik, and let's hold this discussion off for a little bit later. Normal, you on with us, man?
Yeah, I'm on.
Hey, my man, stay on the line, because I want to talk to you about this. Because you got a valid point. I want to talk to you. Go ahead, my man, Lurik. Hello?
Yeah, no,
go ahead, brother.
Go ahead, man.
Yeah. Last week we were talking about the Colazo-Berto fight. A few days ago, you know, Don King came through as a promoter, made a bid for $420,000, where the WBC came back and, you know, reneged on their part because they told us if we bid on the fight, they're going to go through with the fight, whoever came through. If Berto or his promoter didn't bid on the fight, who was Lou DiBella, he didn't bid on the fight. The WBC pulled the bid off on Wednesday, the same 2 hours before the bid was supposed to be in, stating that, you know, it was not enough money. So they're looking at this as a money thing for the WBC. They would make more money if the Mosley fight go on as a sanctioning fee than if they would let the Colossal fight go on with Berto, which is not, you know, the right thing. But he's still number one. They've been, for the last year, they voted three times to put him mandatory for number one. So why is this, you know, they're still doing the same old business as usual. Are we trying to get to the point where boxing should be moving in a more positive direction?
So wait a minute. You're telling me right now that Andre Berto, is he backing out of this fight? He's not giving this fight up to fight Colossal? Is that what you're saying?
Yep. But they're after the Mosley fight. I understand they want the money, but, you know, the right thing to do to handle business as a fighter point of view. I would like to, you know, redeem myself before I move on.
If I remember correctly, Mosley doesn't want to fight with Berto. So why is that fight being negotiated?
Well, HBO stepped up, I guess, on January 30th and trying to put that fight together as a unification fight, where the WBC told Andre Berto and his people that they was not going to allow that. He has to fight Luis Collazo, or they're going to strip him of the belt. Now, the WBC reneged on that on Wednesday, called off the bid. When Don King, who, you know, sometimes we have no hope on, but he came through with his bid at $420,000.
Let me ask you this. Now, is Shane Mosley at this moment saying he wants Berto's title, or is this HBO saying?
I think HBO is trying to work the deal out with Schaefer and whoever involved, Al Haymon and, you know, Lou DiBella. But at the end of the day, what is right for boxing and what's right for the sanction? And I think that's what they got to do. I mean, you know, as far as politics and boxing, is the same old thing. Every day, every fight we go through is the same thing. The IBF stripped Joshua Cody his belt when he was going to fight Cotto. They stripped Margarito when he was going to fight Cotto. You know what I'm saying? So only the WBC and the WBA is, you know, into this crooked thing that they're telling you one thing, and now they want us to go all the way to the convention in 3 weeks in South Korea to say that this is what they want us to do. You know what I mean? Why should we be wasting all this money on lawyer's fee when, you know, there's already the right thing to do, and it's right there on pen and paper what they told us they're going to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. You know what? Machine Gun Red, who's our PR of Leland in the Ring, Machine Gun Red, we got Shane Mosley's number. Call Shane Mosley. Find out what the hell is really going on. Call Andre Berto. Find out what's going on. We got my man right here right now who represents Luis Collazo. Let's get through all these gentlemen on the line all at the same time. Let's find out what's really going on. Is HBO dictating what's really supposed to be happening in boxing? I mean, we've had videos after videos. We've had people after people talking about the fact that even in boxing, or it was Max Boxing that made an article talking about HBO is ruining boxing. Showtime seems to be showing up what needs to be done in boxing. They got the tournament. They're doing what needs to be done. So, HBO, man, you got to step it up. You got to show what we're doing and stuff like that, because you got hardcore fight fans right now complaining about what's going on in the world of boxing. You have a man right now who's a manager who's in the mix of boxing saying right now, this is just complete bullshit. And if this is what it is, you even got a call right now calling me saying I'm a big mouth because I'm saying this and this and that. So now you're making me a liar about situations. I don't like to be called a liar. Machine Gun Red, make your business. Do this. Get these three men on the line. Let's find out what's really going on. You know what I'm saying? It's like the old corner block stuff, beef. You know, the old corner block beef. You know, when you got something to say, let's pull it out of the ground. You know what I'm saying? It's that old fruit. You want to eat it, pick it up, grab it, let's snack on it. Brother, I appreciate you calling up and saying what you got to say. You got anything else to say about this whole situation?
Oh, I think you guys are doing a great show, and, you know, thanks for having me on, and hopefully in the next week or the following week we'll follow up on some more. To, you know, as the information comes in, I'll let you guys know and let the fans, you know, dictate who they want to see fight next. And I think it's just a fair fight. I think it's just a fight that the public wants to see, you know.
I absolutely believe. I think the same thing, brother. And I appreciate you coming on here and leaving the ring and dropping this and all that, because I believe that the hardcore fight fans, they want to hear this, because that's what the hardcore fight fans come on here. You know, we don't say we're right. The fans say that we're right. We even got my man right now that's on the line that's saying, I'm not right. And I ain't saying I'm right. That's why he's breaking it off to me right now. He's over here telling me, yo, Ruff, you talk a lot of shit. You got a big mouth. I'm going to shut you up. That's what it's all about. Hardcore fight fans, get on the line and say, yo, you know what? Just because you're on the panel, just because you're on the mic, does not make you right. I appreciate you calling in, brother. Let's, David Chan, let's patch in my man right now that was talking to me about Floyd Mayweather Jr.
Bro, before I do that, I want to make sure we don't miss our next guest, Mr. Israel Vasquez. I see a number from the area code 347. Caller, you on the air?
Yeah, what's up? This is Jesse Reakin. Israel's calling in on a 323 area code.
Senor Vasquez, are you on the line?
Sí, yes.
Senor Vasquez, ¿qué pasó, man? ¿Cómo estás?
Muy bien, gracias. ¿Cómo están todos por allá?
Bien. Nomás quiero decirle primero, gracias mucho para hablar con nosotros y para tener el tiempo para hablar con nosotros aquí y Living in the Ring.
No, al contrario, muchas gracias a ustedes y agradezco el apoyo que me han dado.
Órale, man. Okay, vamos a tener el porqueño para hablar por usted, o sea, you could ask, okay, let's go with Jesse
okay.
Reakin, okay? Jesse, first off, I want to say, it's been a minute. It's been a minute since he's been out of the ring.
Okay. Pero hacía mucho tiempo que tú no estabas boxeando.
Sí, and the thing that I'm a little worried about, the minute that he's been gone, does he still have the motivation to do this?
Tú faltaba mucho tiempo boxeando. ¿Tú todavía tienes motivación a boxear?
Sí, claro, pues sí, este deporte es como una droga y bueno, así lo tomo. Yo lo tomo con mucho cariño, mucho amor y todavía tengo muchas ganas por seguir en este deporte.
He loves the sport. He has a lot of love for it, and he still has a lot of motivation to keep going in the sport.
Now he said it's just like a drug, right? He said it was just like a drug.
¿Tú dijiste que es como un droga?
Sí, porque no puedes el tiempo que estaba lejos de entrenar y lejos de las peleas, pues siempre trataba yo de estarme haciendo sombra, haciendo movimientos de pelea y todo eso. Entonces, por eso digo que es una droga.
No.
Yeah, it's a drug.
Go ahead.
Should I translate that? Yeah, it's a drug because...
I'm the only one that can speak Spanish, so I understand. But go ahead, tell me.
All the time he's been gone, he's been watching fights, and he's been dying to get back in the ring. So yeah, it's like a drug.
Okay, so just like a drug, like most drug addicts, okay, we are unaware that this takes a wear and tear on our bodies. Okay, and just like most drug addicts, we think that we can maintain it. So can he be in that category where he may think he maintained it after having three wars with Rafael Marquez? It may be a little bit too much. Is he a little worried about that, that his body may no longer, just because his mentality says yes, but his body may say no?
Como alguien que hace mucho droga, ellos piensan que puede ser la droga la vida entera, pero no entiende que lo está molestando el cuerpo de ellos. Y como un droga para ti, boxeando como un droga, la pelea que tú tenías con Rafael Márquez, te apura de ti que eso te dañaste, se dañó tu cuerpo y tú no vas a ser el mismo boxeador que tú eras antes.
Ah, pues sí, lógicamente el cuerpo se va desgastando, el cuerpo va pidiendo que, bueno, llega un momento en que sí ya no puede dar más de lo que uno pide, pero siempre estoy consciente de eso, siempre me procuro, aunque esté fuera de los encordados, cuidarme mucho y bueno, pues tratar de mantenerme, ¿no? Porque es mi cuerpo y es el que me va a durar toda la vida.
Yeah, it is. He's always moving forward, and he's trying to maintain his body because it's going to be the body that's going to be there for the rest of his life, but he thinks he's fine.
Let's just ask him this. You know, obviously, Mr. Vasquez understands that this is a man that siempre no tenía las kilos muy bonito. He never had the skills of a pretty fighter, okay? This was a guy the odds were against him. Now that he understands that, and he's a champion, and being a Mexican champion, how does he feel that finally he made it and he needs to maintain it?
Tu estilo de boxeo no era el más lindo, no era el mejor, pero tú viniste cuando mucha gente estaba diciendo que tú no lo podías hacer, y ahora tú eres un campeón. Un campeón mexicano. I'm sorry, Ruff, can you finish that question? What was the rest of it?
I said, now, how does he expect, now that he has it, does it make him more hungrier to maintain it?
Y ahora que tú tienes que coger, ahora que tú eres campeón, tú todavía tienes más motivación a quedarte campeón de antes cuando tú querías ser campeón.
Claro, eso realmente es lo que, eso es un punto bueno, porque yo siempre anhelé ser campeón, ser reconocido por la gente. Ahora, cuando logré hacerlo, pues pasó un accidente, pues digámoslo así, de esa manera, lo de las cirugías y todo esto. Bueno, por eso regreso ahora, porque quiero culminar mi sueño de seguir en la cima y tratar de conquistar los más triunfos y metas posibles.
He said, of course, he's always been the people's champion, but now he has the belt that makes him the champion, and that's why he wanted to get back in the ring, because he's hungry to show people that he could keep this championship, and he wants to defend the championship.
Let me ask you this, okay? The fact knowing that his name has not been praised yet, okay, ask him that first.
What's that?
Ask him. The fact that his name has not been praised yet by the Mexican people.
Que tu nombre, ellos no lo están diciendo mucho lo mexicano.
Does that upset him that you hear the Marquez name has been more praised more than his at this moment? Does he need to defeat a Puerto Rican star at this moment to get the full love of Mexican people?
Ahora que mucho mexicano está hablando de Marquez y Marquez está cogiendo mucho reconocimiento, eso te molesta
y tú crees que si tú peleas con un boricua, un puertorriqueño, que eso te va a hacer más reconocimiento en como mexicano.
Claro, sí, porque bueno, lógicamente, independientemente del ser humano, vaya, están los reconocimientos a nivel internacional. En este caso, pues pelear con otro que no sea del mismo país, pues te llena más regocijo, ¿no? Llena más emoción. Y pues me gustaría enfrentarlo, como digo, yo vengo muy motivado, vengo muy consciente de lo que puede pasar y quiero ganarle a los grandes nombres, no solamente a Rafael, a la dinastía Márquez, yo quiero ganarle a Yuriorkis Gamboa, a un Juan Manuel López, yo quiero ganarle a un Chris Young, yo vengo por eso, porque quiero ganarle a los mejores.
He said, of course, it's just logical that if you beat a player on the international scale, you're going to get more recognition. He wants to be known for somebody that beat just more than Rafael Márquez. He wants Juan Manuel López, Yuriorkis Gamboa, these boxers, he wants to face them, and he wants to be somebody and prove himself.
So when we talk about, let's say, Juan Ramon Marquez Gamboa, because obviously they're not talking about him anymore. They're talking about fighting each other. Does that kind of upset him that they're, like, even already excluding them of being a champion?
Eso te molesta que Juan Manuel López y Gamboa, ellos están hablando de peleando juntos, pero ellos no mencionan tu nombre. Eso te molesta.
No, para nada. Yo creo que cada quien busca sus rivales a modo para poder triunfar. Y bueno, de alguna manera, pues ellos quieren pelear para hacer nombre. Yo lo conseguí, no sé, hace 2, 3, 4, 5 peleas atrás. No sé, la gente me da reconocimiento. Y bueno, si se da una pelea con ellos, sería interesante. Pero si no, pues qué lástima por ellos, porque yo creo que me necesitan a mí para poder triunfar también.
He said, of course not. He thinks, like, you know, 3, 4 fights ago, his name was starting to get a little more recognized by the people, and he feels like they need to beat him to make names for themselves also. It's just not one side.
Well, let's ask him this. I mean, his name, it was recognizable after the third fight with Marquez. Does he feel by this layoff, he has ruined his marketability in this boxing game?
Tu nombre era más famoso con la pelea con Rafael Márquez, la tercera pelea. El nombre tuyo, todo el mundo lo sabía.
Sí, yo creo que la... Sí.
Espera, un segundo. Tú estás apurado que la gente se va a olvidar de tu nombre porque tú faltaba mucho tiempo ya boxeando. Hace mucho tiempo que la gente te vio boxeando. Tú estás apurado que... ¿Ya ellos no se recuerdan de tu pelea y ya se olvidaron de ti?
No, la verdad no me apura. Yo creo que los fanáticos, que a lo mejor no van a ser muchos, pero mucho que gente que me mira por la calle solamente me recuerda como si la pelea hubiera sido apenas hace unos 2 o 3 semanas atrás. Siempre me pregunta cuándo vamos a hacer la cuarta pelea entre Rafael y yo, porque yo creo que los dos entregamos mucho arriba al ring. Y eso, por eso es que nos dan reconocimiento, no solamente a mí, sino también a Rafael.
He said, no, it's probably not everybody, but a lot of the fanatics know him. They know him in the street, and it's just like if the fight would have happened 2 or 3 weeks ago, and everybody's asking him, when's that fourth installment that he's going to fight Rafael again?
What is the definition to him to be a Mexican champion? I mean, to me, I understand. I know what it is. Yo soy mexicano. What is the definition to the world to be a Mexican champion?
¿Qué definición hace un campeón mexicano? ¿Qué eso te quiere decir a ti?
Bueno, yo creo que eso se lo tendrían que preguntar a la gente, a los aficionados. ¿Por qué? Pues yo me considero Israel Vázquez como el mejor peleador en el mundo, libra por libra. no porque tenga las peleas con Rafael, sino porque soy un ser humano y bueno, los reconocimientos pues lógicamente me lo da la gente, no yo mismo.
He said, well, you have to ask the officials, and, you know, he feels like he's the best pound-for-pound fighter out there.
Is that, nomás dile a la gente, el más chingón.
Yo soy el más chingón del mundo.
El más chingón del mundo. Yo puedo entrar con yo, quien quiera y yo puedo hacer quien quiera. Y yo soy el más chingón. Nomás dile a la gente así, el más chingón.
Okay.
I'll see you right now. Okay. I'm telling the people right now. This is what I said. I told Israel Vasquez right now. He always going to say, I'm the shit. I'm the man. I can get in whoever with. I will knock them out. No matter what. I'm the shit. I'm the man. That's what makes the Mexican champion. Right? ¿Cómo no?
Sí.
Exactly. So I'm going to pass the panel to Jesse Regan. Let's pass the panel real quick to, you know, my brother, my ace, my man, my brother from another mother, the Iron Lungs Blood. Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, I wanted to ask him if he has any concerns about the detached retina and, you know, if that's weighing heavy on his mind at this time. Any concerns about the detached retina?
About the what now?
Detached retina. Any have a detached retina? Any have surgery for detached retina?
Yeah,
he did.
El golpeo tuyo, tú estás apurado que... accidente tuyo que va a venir para atrás y tú no vas a hacer y se va a molestar tu cuerpo con surgery que tú tenías.
No creo, yo creo que tengo mucha confianza en mí, en mi preparación, que creo que no vaya a pasar nada. Yo voy a tratar de conquistar lo que me he propuesto y voy a hacer de cuenta que nunca pasó nada.
He said, no, he doesn't think so. He has a lot of confidence in how the operation went. And hopefully it'll feel like nothing, like the surgery never even happened.
Okay, who's his trainer at this time? He's still working with Rudy Perez?
Rudy Perez. Do you think it's Hello? Israel.
Yo.
Go ahead. Hello.
Israel, that he?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I think we lost
Hello.
Israel.
Did we lose Israel? Yeah. Did we lose him?
I just saw his number disappear, so I guess he disconnected.
Okay. Well, let's wait until he gets back on. Let's get my man on that was talking about Floyd Mayweather.
Oh, never mind. He's back. Let's try again. Señor Vázquez?
Okay.
Sí, disculpen. Se cortó la llamada.
He said sorry about that.
Okay.
¿Tú estás entrenando con Rudy Perez todavía?
Sí, todavía. Seguimos con él. Yo creo que las dos peleas que ganamos a Rafael, pues nos dio muy buenos resultados. Y bueno, pues gracias a Dios, todavía estamos con él.
Yeah, they're still with Rudy Perez. He thinks that he did a great job with the last two matches with Rafael Marquez, and that's why they're still with him.
But true that. Strike hard.
Okay. I just have one question myself. Why does he feel the need for a fourth fight with Rafael Marquez after, I mean, first of all, why would he want to do it after having a broken nose in the first one and a detached retina in the third one? But why the need for it when he won two out of the three fights and the last two at that?
¿Por qué tú crees que tú tienes que pelear con Rafael Marquez una más vez cuando tu nariz se rompió la primera vez? El segundo accidente pasó la tercera vez y tú ganaste los dos peleas ya y eran los últimos dos. So, ¿por qué tú crees que tú necesitas pelear con Rafael Márquez otra vez?
Bueno, yo creo que todo el mundo como ser humano tenemos metas y tenemos orgullo. Yo creo que más que nada el orgullo es lo que me hace subir al ring todas las veces que peleo, porque no quiero ser derrotado, y si soy derrotado, tengo mi derrota muy, muy fuerte, muy, muy muy duro, vendo mi derrota fuerte. Y bueno, una cuarta pelea con Rafael, porque bueno, todo el tiempo ha pasado hablando, él ha pasado hablando mucho tiempo de que no ganó la pelea, que la detuvieron muy pronto, en el caso de la segunda pelea, en la tercera pelea, que a lo mejor fue víctima de un robo. O sea, esas cosas creo que no van. El orgullo mío es demostrar a la gente realmente que no solamente fue una decisión muy apretada, sino quiero que ganarle convincentemente para que él deje de estar hablando.
Okay. He thinks that every boxer has a reason to get in the ring. You know, he wakes up in the morning and he has the heart to do it, and that's why he's always in the boxing ring. He feels like Rafael Marquez is still throwing out excuses of going up and way too quickly, or the match is happening too quickly, and you know, he's still having excuses. So he wants a fourth and final match to beat him, so Rafael can't even say, so Rafael Marquez could have no excuses left.
I understand. I respect that. I'll pass it along.
Chris, go ahead, man.
Just two questions real quick. First up, what does his wife think? Does she have any concerns about him continuing on with his career right now or anything?
Tu esposa está apurado que tú vas a pelear otra vez. Ella está bien contigo peleando.
Sí, ella pues está un poco nerviosa, pero creo que a lo largo de los entrenamientos yo le he dado la confianza para que tenga la confianza en mí para yo creo que vamos a regresar otra vez con un triunfo y bueno, después de eso pues ya yo creo que le voy a devolver la tranquilidad porque una cirugía, bueno, algunas cirugías del ojo y todo lo que puede pasar con las tres peleas con Rafael, pero yo creo que vamos a volver otra vez a triunfar y va a ser en grande.
He said, yeah, you know, she was nervous at first, but he feels like as training went along, she built the confidence to trust him. Of course, the worry's always going to be there, you know, with an eye surgery and such as, but you know, she should be there for his, to the side till he gets a big match.
Okay, last question. What's the determining factor on how long he's going to continue his career? Does he have, like, a set number of fights he'd like to continue or finish or, you know, like a certain age he wants to finish by or, you know, anything in particular?
Yeah. Tú sabes, tú tienes un número de pelear que tú quieres hacer antes que tú te retiras o... ¿Cuántos años tú quieres ser antes que tú te retiras? ¿Tú tienes un plan así?
Bueno, yo como lo dije en el principio de la entrevista, yo soy de los personas que me apasiono tanto, no solamente en el deporte, en el boxeo, sino en el deporte, que este boxeo se me hace como una droga. Yo quisiera pelear, si es posible, toda mi vida, pero como repito, mi cuerpo ya no da a veces para más. No sé cuánto tiempo más voy a hacer. Quizás unos 2 o 3 años más, pueden ser unos 4 o 5. No, todavía no sé, tengo que demostrarme primeramente a mí mismo que todavía tengo las facultades y en base a eso, pues bueno, ya determinar cuánto tiempo quiero seguir más en el boxeo.
He said he's not sure, he just doesn't know, it could be 3 years, it could be 4 years. If it was up to him, he'll box for the rest of his life, but obviously, you know, your body doesn't agree with you. So he doesn't know. Whenever his body feels like he should retire, that's when he should retire. But he could go for 3, 4 years, 5 years. He doesn't know.
All right, go ahead and take it, David Chen.
All right. Could you please ask him, in the third round of his third fight with Rafael Marquez, he was down and then he got up immediately to hurt Rafael Marquez. What was going on in his mind at the moment? How did he stay so calm and make it through that round and turn it around?
En la pelea, en el third round, Rafael Marquez te tumbó al piso. Tú te levantaste y tú empezaste a tirar puño a Marquez. ¿Qué estaba haciendo? ¿Qué te fuiste por tu mente cuando esto noqueó? ¿Y cómo tú eras? ¿Y cómo tú podías pelear tan bien después de él noqueándote?
Oh, bueno, pues es lo que les llamo, les digo hace rato, que es el orgullo, ¿no? A mí como ser humano no me gusta que que nadie me toque, es pelea y tengo que también recibir golpes. Pero cuando llegan ese tipo de puntos donde yo puedo dar más, pero todavía no me exijo tanto dentro de la pelea, es cuando empiezo a pelear un poco mejor y más motivado para sacarme la frente de la caída.
Okay. Well, he said usually when somebody, you know, hits him or he gets knocked down, it actually makes him a better fighter. It makes him attack even more, and it turns him into a better boxer, having to come back.
We were talking about his wife, and actually I remember that was a good story where when he first met her, he tried really hard repeatedly to get her to go out with him. Can you ask him a little bit about that, have him tell us a little bit about that? Does him and his wife still have a good laugh about it once in a while?
Estaba oyendo algo de tu vida, que cuando la primera vez que tú conociste tu esposa, tú estabas tratando de salir con ella y ella no sabía, quería salir contigo. ¿Lo puedes decir a nosotros un poco de eso?
En realidad sí accedió. Lo que pasó fue que ella trabajaba en un beauty salón y bueno, yo quería irme a cortarme el cabello muy seguido, ya no tenía cabello y era, pues se quedaba pensando porque yo no me atrevía más que nada a decirle lo que sentía por ella.
He said she used to work at a beauty salon. He used to go there all the time to get his hair cut, even when he didn't even need it. But he was kind of nervous to ask her out for the first time.
Harder than championship match?
Él dijo, era más difícil decirla como tú te sentabas de peleando para un pelea para el campeón.
Claro, porque aquí me da un poco más de vergüenza y arriba del ring, pues solamente esa tener inteligencia y tirar golpes.
He said, of course, because over here, you know, he gets a little shy. In the ring, he just has to hurt people and throw punches.
Thank you, Israel, for answering my questions. We have our friend of the show, Rob from Puerto Rico, I believe, is on right now. Rob, go ahead.
Hey, I just wanted to ask him, what does he think of the competition between Puerto Rico and Mexico? And, yeah.
¿Qué tú crees de la competición de Puerto Rico y México?
Es grande porque toda la gente puertorriqueña ha demostrado tener una gran calidad boxística, no solamente con Tito Trinidad, con Miguel Cotto, con Wilfrido Gómez. Todos ellos yo creo que han hecho su historia a base de buenas peleas. Y yo, bueno, también los mexicanos, también, pues yo creo que más que nada los mexicanos tenemos mucho corazón. Entonces esa combinación pues es letal, ¿no? Para dos peleadores que suben al ring, pero muy emocionante para toda la gente.
He said it's huge because Puerto Rico has these big stars that are skilled, Tito Trinidad, Miguel Cotto, and he thinks that one thing that Mexican boxers has is a lot of heart. So a Mexican versus Puerto Rican match is driven with a lot of heart and a lot of emotion, so it's a big deal for the sport.
I just wanted to ask one more question, and being that the competition between Puerto Rico and Mexico is such a big competition and such a heated one, does he feel that sometimes in the bad time, in weak moments of boxing, does it carry the sport and help the sport grow?
Como los mexicanos contra los boricua es un grande cosa, y tú crees que cuando boxeo se está, nadie lo está viendo mucho. ¿Tú crees que esa competición contra México y Puerto Rico lo ayuda el boxeo?
Claro, claro. Incluso, por ejemplo, a la pelea que viene en el próximo mes, Miguel Cotto enfrenta a Manny Pacquiao, pues Manny ha demostrado ser un gran peleador, un peleador con mucha rapidez y muy inteligente. Y Miguel Cotto, pues bueno, se ha dado a conocer por su gran pegada, su valor, porque se ha levantado de la lona a ganar. Y bueno, pues toda esa combinación es algo parecido con lo que hace México contra Puerto Rico, el corazón, la fortaleza, el inteligente, todo eso. Entonces esa combinación pues hace que la gente se anime un poco más para ver boxeo, porque sí, ese sí es una gran pelea, una pelea buena.
He said of course, for example, the Miguel Cotto Manny Pacquiao match, You got speed and intelligence versus, you know, total strength. And, you know, it's a reminder of a lot of Mexican versus Puerto Rican matches, with Mexicans having a lot of heart against Puerto Rican strength. And it's just an example, and it's going to be a great match.
Gracias por el tiempo y espero que tu lucha va bien la próxima salida.
No, gracias a ustedes.
Gracias.
You're also thanks to us. I want to ask Israel a quick question here. Israel, tú hablaste de Miguel Cotto contra Manny Pacquiao. ¿Quién tú crees que va a ganar? I'm asking him who is he picking on the Miguel Cotto versus Manny Pacquiao match.
Pues yo creo que Miguel Cotto, porque Miguel es un peleador grande, fuerte, con gran pegada y, como lo repito, mucho corazón. Y Manny Pacquiao pues ha demostrado ser un gran peleador, que ha subido muchas divisiones, pero yo creo que la velocidad que él muestra en las peleas la va a poder minimizar Miguel en la pelea, así que yo le voy a Miguel Cotto.
He says he's picking Miguel Cotto. He has a lot of strength, a lot of heart. Manny Pacquiao has been going through weight. He's a great fighter, but he's picking Cotto.
I think we got our friend Damon on the show right now. Damon, if you're still in the air, go ahead and ask Israel Vasquez a question. Well, I guess Damon isn't on with us right now. Well, Mr. Vasquez, we really enjoyed talking to you today. We really appreciate you taking your time out today.
Gracias por la entrevista y gracias por coger tiempo a hablar con nosotros.
Gracias a ustedes.
Yeah, we wish you the best, and we hope you stay strong for many years to come.
Okay, Israel, gracias.
Hasta luego.
Y buena suerte.
Muchas gracias.
Adiós.
Well, guys, that was Israel Vasquez. I mean, well, what can we really say? Is, you know, he's the winner of probably one of the best trilogies, obviously my favorite, you know, being the one most recent in memory. Blood, what do you think about Israel as a fighter, man? Obviously, he's exciting, but, you know, what are your opinions? You know, tell us a little bit about your experiences watching the trilogy.
Oh, man, it was a great trilogy, man. I think he's a great fighter. I think he has an opportunity. Really ain't that old, man. I mean, he's been in the ring for a while. He has a lot of, you know, in that ring, you know, you get old pretty quick, but... Man, I think he still has a whole lot to offer. He's hungry. And, you know, it just depends on where he's at mentally. He sounds like he's ready to do it, man. So I'm excited about him coming back, man. And I always wish the best for fighters who've been around as long as he has. The older fighters, of course, I'm going to be a little bit biased towards them at all times. So, man, I'm wishing him the best, man. I'm going to be rooting for him.
I actually want to see a fourth match between Vasquez and Marquez.
You know, it's actually interesting because at first you think, you know, why are they having a fourth match when it was already a 2 out of 3? But honestly, you know, a lot of the old school guys, when they have a rivalry going, they have many fights. You know, Jake LaMotta fought Robinson, you know, all those times. And even though Robinson kept winning, they, you know, as long as the people wanted to see it and they wanted to do it, it was good for the sport. Dave, you back on with us, man?
Hey, nothing but a gangster party.
What?
Hey, listen, man. You know what? Let's get the Floyd Mayweather fan on. Is he still on?
Yeah, man. I kept Damon. Damon, be cool, brother. He's been on the air, but I don't know if he's at his phone.
Yeah, Damon, what's up, brother?
Yeah, I'm on.
Okay, Damon. Let's go back, man. Let's refresh the memory of everybody else that we were talking about. Go ahead. Because, like you said, I got a big mouth. What were you saying?
Wait. First of all, I just want to say, man, I got a lot of respect for all you guys. I mean, I learned a lot about boxing.
No, you don't.
Listen, guys.
You know, it's not about disrespect. I respect what you say. Because, you know what, brother, it's all about being a hardcore fight fan. You know what, this is the way we talk. There's no pity, Pat. You know what I mean? If I got a beef, if I got to say something to somebody that's a crossroad, I'm going to tell them straight. Then you got a big fucking mouth. That's all good. I do not trip off of that. Don't worry about it, brother. It's not, you're not disrespecting me. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? Don't even worry about that, man, because this is why we got to leave it on the ring. Go ahead, man. State your truth. What you want to say?
What I'm saying is the man is holding down the welterweight division. You talking about Colosso. I mean, I seen that. Yeah, he beat Berto, but Berto can't beat Mayweather either. I don't think. I mean, I mean, right now, right? I mean, in 2009, going on 10, I don't really see nobody beating him. I mean, only one I think maybe has a shot is maybe Pacquiao. He may, you know, get it with a good shot or something, but that's about it.
What about Paul
Williams? You know what?
I don't think Paul could do it.
No, 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 no.
I mean, look
wait.
For the Puerto Rican
no, we're talking about. We're talking about Tito fight, right? You said, let's go to what man got to say. He said, okay, because if I remember correctly, because you're bringing me back some memories right now. We talked about this on YouTube. You said, Tito fight, okay? Now, fuck Paul Williams. We're not talking about Paul Williams, but you said right now, Andre Berto. Now,
you know, he's still a lot of
sentence. The whole point of this is this, that. This is the whole point. If he would have defeated Andre Berto, Luis Carrazo, or any legitimate welterweight, nobody would be complaining. I'm only speaking for the hardcore fight fans. The hardcore fight fans are saying, you know what? He beat a lightweight champion. Why is that so bad? Why is that so bad when you hear that he just beat somebody that was...
Like I don't interrupt you, but look, these dudes want to fight these welterweights. They want to go up and fight these welterweights. That's their problem.
Well, how is he holding down the division then, brother? Explain that.
If the dude would have beat him, y'all would have been, you know, jumping for joy. But soon as he
No, bullshit. You know what? You know what the problem with your man is this. Let me tell you about Money Mayweather. He says, every time you ask him, he says, oh, the reason why I fought him is because he called me out. Well, you know what? The same ones he called you out the night he defeated Marquez. What is his excuse now?
Look.
What's your excuse? Don't fight. Sugar Shane Mosley. What's the excuse? What's the excuse now, bro? I mean, as a Floyd Mayweather fan, make up an excuse for him.
There's a lot of excuses. What? I mean, a few years ago, he may got a shot. Mosley cannot beat that boy. Okay?
Man, no, we're not talking about
that. We don't know that.
You don't do not tell. Come on, we're talking about the person right now. A person right now. Let me ask you this. A year ago, if I would have told you, if you would have came to me a year ago about a fucking race, and I said no, but right now you're qualified, and I still said no because I'm basing it on a year ago, you're going to tell me right now that's a valid point. You're going to tell me, you know what, D? Ruff, fuck you. Bullshit. That is a bullshit excuse.
Not only that. I mean, I know you guys don't want to talk about it, but look at the money. I mean, who you going to fight, Mosley or Pacquiao? You know, I mean, he's going to make...
Who cares about that? What about the legacy of boxing, dog? What about the legacy of boxing? What has happened about the integrity of boxing? So what, Manny Pacquiao? He's a small man. So what about Manny Pacquiao? So he brings a bunch of Filipinos. Who gives a shit? Sugar Shane Mosley is a hard one.
I don't like Sugar Shane Mosley. I don't like Pacquiao either, but the money makes sense. I ain't no Pacquiao fan, but you know the money makes sense. You gotta agree.
Okay. Let's give me that. The Money Mayweather fan, are you satisfied that he's the best welterweight champion in the world? If he beats Manny Pacquiao, are you satisfied? Tell me, are you satisfied that he's the best welterweight champion in the world?
You're taking too long,
dog. That means you're thinking about it.
You got a point.
If I was a Money Mayweather fan, I would have been like,
he made a mistake is when he said that Mayweather was holding it down. He ain't explained that.
He is holding it down. I'm not saying.
He ain't holding nothing down.
Best welterweight of all time. Sugar Ray probably would have beat him. Hearns would have beat him. But right now, ain't nobody going to beat him.
Well,
He should fight Clyde.
That African kid can't beat nobody. You see what he did when he fought Cody. He had a chance then, hurting his knee and all that shit. He almost.
You know what, dog? That's BS. You know what? I'm going to tell you right now. You just say Moses lost to Cotto. Cotto lost to Margarito. Margarito lost to Shane Mosley. Come on.
Margarito,
can we go more clear
than
that?
Margarito's
a
nothing but a journey.
We more clear than that, though, brother.
Mayweather didn't want to fight Margarito, though, brother. Remember that?
Margarito's a banana peel away from being a journeyman.
I mean, he said straight up he wanted to fight people who stepped to him. Margarito stepped to that man straight up.
Look, the dude, Margarito comes straight in, and you know he can't beat him. Not with that style.
Ask for my man's question. Look, every time your man fights in the ring, he says, "Had called me out," or "Marquez called me out," or "Margarito called me out."
Margarito didn't only call him out; he came up in that man's face.
No.
Like I said, he drove down to Las Vegas, hanging out in front of that man's house and begging for a fight.
There ain't a whole lot of guys who haven't called Mayweather out, too, man. Elite welterweights have called him out.
Let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. Timothy Bradley has called out Floyd Mayweather. Does he have more right than Sugar Shane Mosley?
Timothy Bradley, come on, man. Why you guys, I mean, come on.
I'm saying that he doesn't have a better case.
I'm only justifying your point because every time your boy fights somebody, he says, "Oh, because they call me out." Well, you see, you know what? Margarito calls you out. Fucking Sugar Shane Mosley stepped in the ring and called you in the face. Is there any negotiations? No. The negotiations are talking about who's the winner of Cole and Pacquiao. So what does that tell you about your man? That tells you exactly about your man. He's a bitch.
Right. And what
cherry picker. He's just a cherry picker.
What does Mayweather have? None.
Mayweather a cherry picker, bro. Hey, trust me, man. He a cherry picker. I ain't gonna call him a bitch, but he a cherry picker, though.
Who's the number one ranked welterweight by Ring Magazine?
He also is a businessman too, and he's ain't gonna go and fight.
Businessman or no businessman? Let me tell you, a businessman or no businessman? Let's get this straight. He's doing exactly what he wants to do. Let's not sugarcoat it. I'm not gonna hate on the man. I'm a huge Mayweather fan. I love his style. But let's don't get this twisted, dog. Come on. We know what he's doing. Don't sit there and tell me that he's moving like a silent assassin like he wants to do. He's picking what he needs to do to keep that O. Not about legacy. This is about money. Admit it. This is about money. This is not about legacy.
It is about money. I'm not denying that. I mean, half of what?
What is your argument? What am I talking so much shit about? Why am I not so loud about it? It's about money.
The thing is, you cannot separate the two, bro. It's both. It's about money and skill. I mean, why?
Money and skill. Okay, you just said it right now. Money and skill pay bills, but it is not. It does not cement legacy. Come on, it does not imprint concrete in stone saying I am all-time greatest world champion of the world. Come on, you got to fight the best people in the world. Floyd Mayweather, money. He's not going to say
God on Caterpillar Pacquiao is being the best thing since sliced bread. He ain't fighting nobody.
I'll give Manny Pacquiao more props for stepping up to fight Miguel Cotto than I will give Floyd Mayweather. Because at least Manny Pacquiao is trying to prove that he's the best in the world. Well, your boy doesn't want to do that. He wants to make the most money in the world. Big difference. Manny Pacquiao does not want to do that. Manny Pacquiao wants to prove he's the best in the world. Big difference in what Floyd Money Mayweather.
How is he proving the best when he's going to fight this man at, what, 142, 143, whatever, doing the same?
It don't matter, though. He's fighting somebody that's worthy. Your man fought a guy that hasn't even proven himself at 142, 143, 144.
Yeah, he got a point right there, though. I had to agree with him on that one, yeah. I got to agree with you.
I'll give a different take on that because there's no way, regardless of this catch weight, there is no way that Miguel Cotto doesn't come in 10 pounds at least heavier on the night of the fight.
Exactly. You know what, man? Let me tell you this, bud. Juan Manuel Marquez has not tested the water above anything than when he tested with 135. Okay? Now, Manny Pacquiao is at least fighting guys that are way above 140. All right? Floyd Mayweather has not done that. He did that with a tuna fight with a guy that was, what, 135? Man, Jay-Z might be blasted out by a 50 Cent old motherfucker, Tupac the Lord? What's wrong with that?
Hey, I want to see the fight. Because I want to see him beat the shit out of Mosley so everybody can shut up. I want to see him get his ass in the
I'll shut up. I know I'll shut up.
But I will shut up.
I'm in the store buying some cigarettes. I'm trying to be real quiet and stuff.
Hey, Red, what you got, Red? What you got? Machine Gun Red. We got Machine Gun Red up on the air right now, trying to be all, you know, in the silent mode. You know what I'm saying? I went down to, let me tell you this, man. I went down to Palm Springs. I was fucking 104. This dude telling me it's going to be nice and cold. What up there, complaining? What you got, dog?
Much be done. What you doing? Hey, I heard. I was hearing the conversation. The show was excellent. Excellent show. Good guest tonight. And I just heard that conversation with Damien. Heard you going. I couldn't understand a word you were saying. I was like, oh no, Ruff is on one. He's on. He got a guy that he's gonna argue with. But actually, it was good. It was a good argument, man. That was a good fight fan hardcore shit. I enjoyed it.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Red, why don't you say on the air right now what we got coming up in the next couple of weeks, man?
Okay, well, next week, as Ruff was saying earlier, we're going to have a Havoc Boxing Apparel. We're going to have the CEO, Tony Hogue, come out, and also Andre Berto's trainer, Andre Rozier. He's going to be out there next week, and they're gonna speak about a little bit about what's going on in the ventures that we're going to be doing with them. And hopefully maybe we can get Omar back on it. What happened?
No, we got Mia St. John, too. Mia St. John is going to be coming on and stuff. The lovely Mia St. John and stuff. She's been on Playboy magazine. She's going to be stopping by and talking to us a little bit about her book, you know, chop it up a little, at least a little bit with us and let us know what's going on with that book and where we can purchase that.
Hey, man, I saw some pictures of her on the Internet, and she does look pretty beautiful.
Yeah, she's fine, man.
Great.
She's fine.
Mm-hmm. She looks fantastic, bro. I mean, I don't know what to tell you, man. She looks fantastic.
You know, we could put her some pictures of her up on the site before she comes on, just get people excited about her coming on for the people who don't know about her. Cause damn, that'd be a nice little promo.
I don't know, man. I mean, if you cannot get excited by the name of Mia Saint Son, then there's something wrong with you, man. Because you know, just by saying her name, I'm getting excited already.
Hey man, when you were talking about her book, I heard a B, and I thought you were gonna say something else. So I was like, what?
It was nice.
Booty.
Opened it up.
That's just what it is, man. You know. I mean, like, hey, being men, you just gotta go like, what?
Hey, we're still on the air.
Let me tell you this, okay? This is a real story, okay?
You ever streamed
them? There's a corner. I'm going to tell you a real story real quick, okay? There's a corner street up on 10th Street, okay? There's a 7-Eleven, but right across from 7-Eleven, there's a liquor store. This is in downtown Fountain Hole, okay? This is before, you know, I mean, homegirl was growing up and everything else, you know what I'm saying? She was doing the top rack, everything. She was a knockout, and I had a huge crush on this woman. So when she had dropped down that she was going to do her, you know, a little playboy thing, dog, I was the first in line. I was doing it. You know what I'm saying? I was one of those cats that was right there. I'm going to buy the shit, and it was great. I mean, I studied it. I know every inch of this woman right now. And then when I saw her,
awkward.
Person, no, when I saw her person, I was like, radio show. You know what I mean? I was like, I felt like I was a dude from On the Grind and shit. You know, Snug Yellow.
Fuck On the Grind, Pac. Hey, fuck Kim Coochie. I'm gonna beat his ass.
Wait, hold on.
Whoever, is this boy still here? Jesse, you still here? Tell that fat to beat his fucking ass. He got a big ass head too. That got a big head. He got a big ass fucking dome on him, dog.
So wait, hold on. What happened with a contract? Because I called in and I heard something about a contract or whatnot.
No, there's no contract. They advertised it.
He talked way too much. He thought I wasn't gonna fight. Man, I'm gonna beat the fuck out of that kid, man. He talked too much, man. He talked too much. I have to come. Wait, I have to leave my Nubian queen. He better have his girl there because I want to fuck his girl too. He better have her there too. That's the real talk right there. Tell him I said all that. I'm gonna beat that little boy ass, man. Telling me gangsters moving silence, man. That motherfucker listening to too much hip hop. What the fuck you gonna tell me, boy? I'm coming to take your heart, your spine, your fucking soul, your girl, all that shit.
I'm telling you, blood. When it comes to on the ground, Blood turns into Mike Tyson interview coming up to the Lennox Lewis fight. I'm gonna eat
his girlfriend. Girlfriend, to come holler at me. Come holler at a real man. Tell her that.
Yeah.
Wait. Yeah, I'm gonna drop another vid on his punk ass too. I ain't done with him. He gonna fight me. If he don't, I'm gonna punch him in the mouth when I see him.
Oh, God.
Listen to this, man. Jesse, you on the line?
Nah, bro, we don't got Jesse. Jesse
ran. Bro. I ain't mean to scare him off, but it's for real, though. This for real. That boy talks to me, man. He really do.
I know already of that the UT fans are making this is Leaving the Ring versus On the Grind. Well, let's make this public. First off, Tim Cucci, he ain't gonna fight me. He won't fight me. He already denied it. He said, I will not fight you. He said he's scared of me. But he feels that my boy Blood's a little softer. I said, okay, cool. Let's make that happen.
He's going to find out the hard way. He has not called me for blood either. Sean Guillermo has not done it.
So what does that tell you? You know what? On the ground, you need to shut up already. You're not going to do nothing. You yelled out. You pushed out. You did everything else. You're going to go after the boxing truth? Come on. Is that a joke? The box? John Chavez and what's the other guy's name? Lois? Come on, man.
The little boy Tim Cucci think I'm playing with him. I'm not playing with him. I want the fucking fight. You know, he the one who was coming on my damn page disrespecting me, man. That's insubordination, dog. He don't disrespect me like that, man. I'm going to kick his fucking ass when I see him. He better sign to fight me or else I'm going to go find his ass.
This can be put on the back photo.
I'm going to take his girl. I'm going to string him up. I'm going to string his girlfriend up.
This can be put on the back photo on the card.
No disrespect to Boxing Chew. We call it the team money. You guys are all great. But I got to tell you now, right now.
In the chat room right now, too. Yeah, he's saying the show was good tonight.
What?
T Money's in the chat room right now. Actually, he's on there right now. He can't hear us because we're streamed. Actually, I don't think anybody can hear us right now.
Well, you tell T Money. You know, no disrespect to them, man, but this is our fight. This is our fight. You know what I'm saying? Let Blood. They don't want to fight me, so let Blood do this shit. You know what I'm saying? On the ground, has already said they ain't gonna fight me. They will not fight me. They're scared. Okay. That's all good. Anyways, man, this night is sitting right now.
All right, Dave. You know, Blood, if they don't hit you up, maybe I'll do it. Maybe they'll fight me. Who knows?
David Chin on the card of Cotto Pacquiao.
Hey Chin, I got your back, baby. He's going with you.
Hey man, I'm about 130 pounds. I think I can get him to fight me. You know, they won't know what was coming. They don't know.
They don't know the storm. The storm is coming.
Well, guys, we had a great show tonight. Thank you guys for staying on talking boxing with us. You know, I had a lot of fun. Next week, like I said, you know, we got a lot of guests coming on. We're working on getting Chad Dawson on the show. We're working on getting Paul Williams on the show. And it's like Red said, we're going to try to get the management teams of both Andre Berto and Luis Collazo up here to see if we can get that going. All right, guys? Well, it was another good episode of the Leaving in the Ring radio show. Chris, Strikehearts, Rob, Red, you guys have a good night.
Good night, brother.
You too.
Peace. Be out here.
Leaving in the Ring.
Radio.
Go ahead, who's this?
Yo, David Chen.
Is it me, man? Is Marquez just a goddamn beast?
Every time Marquez moves up in weight, moves to a different division, he's fighting the toughest competition he can find there. You know, he's not just finding a name that's stylistically good for him. He's fighting the hardest fight he could fight and then winning.
See, if anything's killing boxing, it's boxing. Not UFC.
You know, I won't bash MMA and I won't say, you know, it's killing boxing or boxing is better, you know, everybody has their own opinion.
Leaving in the Ring.
Shane Mosley versus Margarito sold out the Staples Center, and that was the largest attendance for any event. Everything, every concert, anything, that was the most. And that was just recently, so that's really where boxing is headed, along with the Ricky Hatton, Manny Pacquiao, selling out.
Even in the ring. Okay, but everybody right now, if you're calling in, I got a couple more calls calling in. I'm not going to pass you through at the moment. But there is a chat room, and if you look on there, there's a chat room. You can start chopping it up or ask your questions, and I will pass you in through as soon as we can.